Good morning, everyone. I hope you're having a Friday, Good Friday so far. If you are joining us here or virtually, you've joined the Finance Committee. Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, Commissioner Rick Areola, and myself. Why don't you tell us how we can join virtually, if you could, Mr. Paz?
Sure. So today's Finance Committee meeting has been scheduled in a hybrid format with a quorum of the committee physically present and remaining members, staff, and members of the public appearing either in person or virtually via Zoom. In order to participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462#, or log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462. Any individual wishing to speak on an item must click the raise hand icon if they are using the Zoom app, or dial *9 if you're participating by phone.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney. John, on item 4, we talked about this a couple of days ago. I met with staff yesterday, so this is an item that Commissioner Gongora first had last year and relates to a potential inequity, or I really think it is an inequity, given that he couldn't invest in the new Tier C. So I've been working on that. I've met with staff. They're going to do some additional work on that. So we're going to defer that until October, and staff's going to be working on some stuff over August and September for us. And if you'll put my name on that, because I'm going to pick that item up, I'm going to resolve whatever inequities are there. And with that, do you have any other announcements, John?
I believe you had mentioned number 7 potentially being deferred.
Yeah, we'll defer item number 7 as well, given that relates to the Byron Carlisle, and we're waiting to see what's going to happen on the vote in on the cultural bond. Could have a bearing on that. And also, we are still waiting. Servitas is going to submit an unsolicited proposal at some point. So we'll defer that. Any other items?
That's it.
Okay. Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, do you have any items that are deferred or anything?
No, I believe everybody's here for my items.
Okay, great. Good. We have a 9:30, but I'm waiting for Commissioner Areola because he also has an item on sports, and I want him to participate in that discussion. So
I think 11 could go pretty quickly.
Let's do number 11 then. That'd be great. Who's going to call that up from? Good morning. Do we have someone from staff that's going to tee that up?
I'm not sure if anyone's from here from police. Art, you want to just go for it? Yeah. That way we can just knock it out.
Do you guys know each other?
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, commissioners. Good morning.
Tell us what you are desirous of.
Good morning. So our request is for the increase of our summer work program. We currently, we doubled our amount of applicants. And basically this program, we target 14 to 16-year-olds. One, because most employers don't hire anybody younger than 16. And then two, we look at it as a juvenile crime prevention measure. We're giving 25 kids pretty much all-day work in a safe, protected environment around adult supervision, and they're learning a trade. The third part of the program is this is a feeder program for the city of Miami Beach. 98% of our kids in this program end up getting some type of job with the city of Miami Beach moving forward after when they become of age to apply to the program.
How long has the program been going?
Not sure on the best. I've been with the city 25 years, and I would say this program has been running for 30 years in the city of Miami Beach. We've always averaged about 10 to 12 employees. This year we did 25 kids. So right now we have kids at Flamingo, North Shore, and Must Park, and next year we look to increase it to maybe 30 to 35, and add Scott Rako as well. And What we do with these kids is, one, for many, this is their first job. So we make them dress up, do an interview, teach them life skills. We bring in financial people from the local institutions like Regions and City National, teach them about a bank, and this is their first check. This year was the first year that I seen that we had 9 kids that didn't have the financial means to provide dress, didn't have the proper dress wear. So my group, along with Officer Martineau and our team and Target, we took these kids shopping to buy them sneakers and pants and shorts, polo shirts, so they could come to work. 2 of my kids live in group homes. And one of the kids actually shared a pair of shoes with his brother. And
John, how has this been funded recurring in the past, or because it's not in the budget right now? So how have we handled this in the past?
Yeah, it hasn't been recurring as far as I remember. I think most every year we have this request. I think the administration at this point feels like we could probably make it a recurring item in the budget.
The program's been going, though, so the chair would certainly entertain a motion to have this included as a. I'll second the motion of Commissioner Areola, and so we'll fund this this year at $66,875, and then John, you'll put it in as a recurring amount, and then if you find that you're going to try to increase the program next year, you'll have to come back and convince us that we want to increase the funding. Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, are you okay with this item?
I'm fine with that.
Okay, it's unanimous. Have a great day.
Go ahead. Thank you. Just one. First of all, thank you. Thank you, as always. The stuff you guys do is amazing. Please let us know if there's more that we can do. You know, sharing those stories are amazing. We're obviously happy to help. Good use of taxpayer dollars giving back into the community. But if there's other things that you think we could help.
I do have a request.
Good.
The boss.
My request is if some of you can come and visit with our children and give a class. Our children may not go to college, but, you know, the fact that you bring the skills and show them,
we would just reach out. And I'm there. I'm sure speaking for my colleagues,
Absolutely.
We'll all be there. But when you talked about, you know, bringing in some companies to, you know, help mentor, I personally do that. But we can also help find local businesses to come in. Everyone would be delighted to give back.
And to pay it forward.
Yeah.
Right.
This is Jennifer, my assistant, pal kid, daughter of Bobby Jenkins, who's come back to work with us.
I love your dad.
And so this is what we're trying to do. You know,
wonderful.
How did you get the funding to help the kids with the clothing? Is that something you had in the pal? Or
We actually had got some gift cards from Target. Mm-hmm. And so we've been giving them out as gift cards, and you know, when Jenny brought the attention, we got kids that don't have the proper attached shoes, and it just.
So if you get down the road and you need some help with that, reach out to us, and we'll help you with that as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Question. So
Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, go ahead.
Thank you. The kids who are coming to get the jobs, which schools are they from?
Pretty much. Feinberg
and
Nautilus, mm-hmm. Both all beach kids.
Oh, so they're all beach kids who are working in that's
yeah,
great.
All beach kids.
And then, of course, some of the our community, being that I'm the NRO, I get a lot of people that come and tell me, officers come and tell me we found a child and we rented a house and they don't have much. And so, you know, that's where we get a lot of our kids as well, recommendations, referrals, officers going to the houses and see what conditions children are living in, and they reach out to R&I. So, you know, parents sometimes can't get a job, but the kid is the one, and that's another thing. Most of the children, they're the ones, this little job that they're getting from us, that is helping them support the family. So, we thank you for what you're doing.
And with that said, you know, they work 5 hours a day, but they can stay longer for volunteer hours, which is a need a requirement for high school. And what we've seen that there's nobody at home, so these kids tend to stay mm-hmm. because of the environment and the camaraderie that they created. So.
And you guys are feeding them every day, too?
Yes, we are.
Getting breakfast
and lunch.
Mm-hmm.
We even give some families gift cards. I normally purchase a couple hundred gift cards a year from Publix, and we have leftover from Thanksgiving. And all the kids that are working, they're enrolled in our book bag giveaway, which we got coming up, and things like that. So we try to make sure that they get all the benefits that we can provide. And especially thank you all for what you do to help us, because it is a village, and you guys make it happen.
It's a great program. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, ma'am.
All right, we'll close this item. Let's call up item number 8. I don't know if someone from staff can tee that up for us.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. On June 24th, staff met with Bruce Oros and Barbara Goicochea of ACT Productions, where they presented a new event concept called the Miami Beach Open 2023. This is a beach tennis and beach soccer tournament in the Collins Park 20th Street beachfront area for the first week in March, like 1 through 5. And their ask is a city sponsorship in the amount of $300,000. Staff recommended that the event organizers meet with the VCA to see if they can get some grant funding first. And the VCA shared that the event would fall under their second period of events taking place between February 1st and May 21st, 2023. As a matter of fact, today at 11 a.m., they have a meeting with them. And so today we have members from ACT Productions here to present the Miami Beach Open 2023.
Yes.
For a max of 10 minutes, so you can do that in 10 minutes or less. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Good morning, committee members and commissioners. We really appreciate the time you're taking to hear this event. And in keeping with the world-class city that we live in, and world-class entertainment and sports is so critically important to this community, I've brought Steve has come down from Orlando to make the presentation. He's been very involved in sports and entertainment for many, many years. We teamed up to see how we could make this event the most incredible event to kick off what I believe you're calling Wellness Month, March 2023. So with that, beach tennis is a growing sport. It's a phenomenal interest for the world now, and followed by which will lead to the Miami Open. So there's a nice timing mechanism that plays into the beach tennis event. Followed by the beach tennis event is a beach soccer event, and soccer now being has placed us sort of in the spotlight around the world because we will be hosting the games in part in 2026. So I just think that the timing and the cohesiveness of all of these activities really is a great mix for this community. So with that, I'd like to introduce Steve Disson and let him take you through the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you. My name is Steve Disson. I'm with Disson Sports and Entertainment, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to present this to you. My background, I think you may have had some handouts so you can see, but I started my involvement in sports and tennis. My first client was Arthur Ashe and Stan Smith, and I was very heavily involved in tennis in terms of producing events, involved with the U.S. Open, and have been involved in sports in many different areas. Happy to also say that I was representing Alonzo Mourning, who I know has done the Zoe Summer Groove. I'm very proud of that event and the involvement that I had with that in the past. But we see an opportunity here for the city of Miami Beach to be involved in something that, and we're looking at this from a long-term perspective, not a one-shot come in quickly, not looking to come in and make a lot of money, but to build something really meaningful. Beach tennis has become the new sport in South America, particularly in countries like Brazil and Colombia, Argentina, Venezuela, which I know are important markets in terms of tourism here. And the event, the beach tennis has now become very popular in Europe, but there has not been a beach tennis event yet in the United States. So through our contacts with the International Tennis Federation and the U.S. Tennis Federation, which govern not only the regular sport of tennis, but also the sport of beach tennis, we spoke to them about what would the opportunity be to bring the first ever sanctioned event to the city of Miami Beach. And fortunately, by good circumstance and maybe good fate, the tour is taking place each year in January and February in South America. There happens to be a week off before the tour then goes to the Middle East and then to Europe. And the week that it's off is the very first week of March. So we are looking at the dates of March 1 to 4, a Wednesday through Saturday to do this tournament. It would actually be a prize money sanctioned tournament featuring the 32 top teams in the world from all over the world. Obviously, heavy participation from South America, but also U.S. participation as well. And there's competition. It's hard to maybe imagine tennis on a beach, but that's how it takes place, just like a regular tennis match. And it's in men's doubles, women's doubles, and mixed doubles. So both male and female participation. And it would be a sanctioned tournament with prize money, the first ever sanctioned tournament. One of the things why we want to get in this early, we want to do this right the first time. We're looking at doing it in March of next year, is to make sure that it's properly promoted, planned, and also televised. And I'll talk about that in a second. So this event would be the first and only sanctioned event in 2023. Our hope would be, and it would be under the name of the Miami Beach Open, that's what we're suggesting, because it will be nationally and internationally televised, is to eventually build it into becoming the Miami Beach U.S. Open, to have it be like the U.S. Open in regular tennis, and to have it start here and take place here each year as being like the significant event in the United States. In addition to that, which would be through Wednesday through Saturday, on Sunday, we would combine that with beach soccer, which is, of course, a sport that has a little bit more history in both internationally and in the U.S. as well. And we would have the national team of Brazil, which is the number one team in the world in beach soccer, play the national team of the U.S. When the last World Cup was held in the United States in California, those teams met in a very competitive match, and it would be the actual national teams, and that would be on Sunday. We have those finals of the beach tennis scheduled for Saturday night and the beach soccer for Sunday night. Obviously, a much nicer from a weather standpoint, having it in the lights and all that. And both of those finals would be nationally and internationally televised. One of the reasons why we're coming early and looking for the trying to get a commitment is I have a special relationship with CBS. I've been working with the network since 1992. The head of programming and the head of the network are both good, close friends. I've got them excited about the idea of being the first network to televise in the United States a beach tennis event and building this into the U.S. Open beach tennis event. And they have committed that they would show both the beach tennis and the beach soccer finals twice, each time for 1 hour. And as a part of that telecast in the United States, by the way, which they would do in each case in March, in that key month of March. Fortunately, we're talking about taping it early. We would need to have an edited show, but they would show it all four broadcasts in the month of March. And in that broadcast, there would be an opportunity for the city of Miami Beach to have commercial time, to have vignette features on the city itself, showcasing it. We've worked with both CBS and then the international partner is TV Globo, which is one of the largest networks in the world. They're based in Brazil. They would be showing it on their main network as well as also on Sport TV, which is their cable network. But we're expecting also to have it televised throughout South America and Mexico as well, the events. But we have a firm commitment from both CBS and from TV Globo to televise the event. Our hope is to do this on an annual basis and to build it into a major event. From a tennis standpoint, what's great about it is it would be the first and only, and it could become the U.S. Open, Miami Beach Tennis Open. And from a soccer standpoint, it's great that Miami is going to be hosting the World Cup in 2026. This would be a nice way to build up the sport and lead into it. We also think it's nice that, coming from the tennis world too, that the Miami Open, which has become one of the premier tennis tournaments in the country and even in the world is at the end of March. So we wouldn't be going at the same time. We wouldn't be going back to back. It would be a nice lead-in. There's already a good, hopefully a good excitement about the Tennis Open coming to there. But this is beach tennis. So you know, on our involvement, I've been very instrumental over the years of getting sports that are kind of up-and-coming sports like beach volleyball. I was the one responsible for getting beach volleyball on national network TV and building the AVP and the WPVA tour, which is the men and women's tour, just to have them become established sports. So if you ever watch the Olympics, you'll see how they're featured now as opposed to just being kind of a sideline sport. So we're excited about getting the city involved. And CBS has been waiting to hear back from us because they've committed to me, if we get to them early enough, that they would put all four broadcasts in prime time so we get good slots and not be stuck in the middle of the morning. And as far as TV Globo is concerned, they're just waiting to hear from us as well. But I think the other important thing is we want to be the first and only sanctioned tournament in the United States from the beach tennis standpoint. And I think there's something that would be really special about being the first and only one in 2023. So we appreciate your consideration. I know you have a handout that was given to you, but happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. So let me just ask a couple of questions, sure. And then I want to turn it to Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez and Fernandez, since they're sponsoring. When you say sanctioned, who would sanction this? The U.S. tennis or this?
I'll tell you all this. Thank you for bringing that up. So from the beach tennis standpoint, it would be sanctioned by the U.S. Tennis Association, USTA, the same one that does the U.S. Open, and also the International Tennis Federation. It would be on their schedule. So just like Wimbledon, French Open, Australian Open, same organization. It's called the ITF.
And they have some partnership or relationship?
And all the materials, all their scheduling, everything they put out about the schedule, it would be included as the Miami Beach Beach Tennis Open. So they would promote it. Also, the USTA, which has their developmental headquarters in Orlando, would also provide guidance in terms of helping us with the setup and the management and getting some of their grassroots organizations involved with the tournament. So that's the tennis. And the soccer would be...
How much is your total budget for the event? Because your ask is how much, 300?
We're asking for 300. Our budget is $600,000 for the event. And we're basically getting almost the other half of it from the two networks in terms of what they're providing us, you know, for the event. So I know we're scheduled for a meeting later today with another organization to help on partial of the funding. But we're looking for the city to come in as the main sponsor as opposed to having it called, I'm just making up the Reebok Beach Open thing. We're looking for it to be the Miami Beach Open.
Okay. And Lissette, is this a cash out or is this support services or a combination of the two?
So we don't have any of those details yet. The recommendation is that we allow them to continue to involve their proposal to go and see if they can get some grant funding from the VCA, some sponsorships. Again, you know, we also discussed this with our colleagues in Parks and Recs, and that's our recommendation. You know, we're working on parallel paths for 23 and 24. We've been talking to different entities in fitness, and even though this does fall into the theme of fitness in March, we definitely would like for them to come back and continue discussions with the city.
Okay. Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, you're recognized.
You know, in 2016, I believe when the Aaron C. Show first came to us, we were very hesitant, and we, you know, gave a large amount of money to sponsor the Aaron C. Show, and it was a little controversial because we weren't sure, you know, what the noise was going to be like. But now, you know, 5 years later, look at the success that it's been. Look at how it's changed the entire culture of Memorial Day. And so when you look at when this is being planned, March 1st through 7th, this is when we are spending millions of dollars on police officers. We're haggling up here about what kind of concerts we're going to do on the beach. So the idea is to grow something like this and just flood the city with everything sports and health related that first week of March, and to get something like this off the ground and work with a national network and work with the International Tennis Associations possibly. I can't see any downside to trying. You know, I think we've seen that programming works. And I think that these types of seed capital go a long way, because eventually maybe we aren't going to have to spend the millions of dollars on police officers, or maybe we won't have to program our own Miami Beach Live, because this event will be up and running with sponsors and successful, and you know, we're all going to be sitting there on the beach. And because we've seen that when we flood the city with this, our average room rate, our ADR, it goes way up, and then we don't have any issues. And that's what this is about, boosting the average daily room rate.
Thank you. Commissioner Riehl, I know that we've got a placeholder, and we've been talking about a sports event, so I'd love to hear your input on this.
Yeah. there's things that I like about it. What I don't like about it is the price tag, so let's talk about the things that I like. It's health and wellness and sports, and it fits with the theme, you know, the types of activations we're trying to do. So I have a couple of questions. Like, does this conflict with any other thing that we have going on during that week of March?
It does not. And it's in a footprint that's outside of where we would be activating.
And that was my next question. Where is this exactly going to be?
They're proposing 20th Street Beachfront, where we have Longines, Polo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. When is White Party? Isn't that the first week of March?
Yeah, I thought
that's
the same question.
That's the first weekend, but it's on 12th Street.
Right. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's a different footprint on the beach.
That's correct.
Now, do you have some projections in terms of, I know you're talking about some amazing network opportunities, which would definitely swing me to fully support this. We've heard this before from other proposers in the past that, you know, didn't deliver. But, I mean, if it is going to get CBS and it is going to get international coverage, that's something I think is, at least for me, very, very attractive. I mean, can you provide some color there? What do you think is going to happen in terms of coverage of this event? And then also, what kind of projections do you have for, tourists coming and folks coming and staying in hotels?
Well, first of all, just so you know, the commitment that we have from the networks is definite, not interest. It's definite. So our other partner, who is Koch Tavares in Brazil, that's the largest sports promoter, they've been doing this for over 30 years, has been doing beach soccer, beach volleyball, beach tennis, and regular tennis events, and working with TV Globo. So the commitment for them to televise both the beach tennis and soccer is definite, and not only on their main network, but also on their cable network. So their potential audience is 9 million people in terms of that. And they will promote it because in Brazil it's so popular. But they're also affiliated with the other countries throughout South America. In CBS, in terms of the viewership, trying to, again, be conservative based on getting good time slots, which as of now they told us they would give us prime time. So that means weeknight or weekend afternoon and evenings, not putting them during the day when people won't watch, because it's one thing to say we're going to get you on and not put you on. But they're estimating conservatively 1 million people will watch on CBS in terms of the sport. You know, again, we're going to build that, hopefully, in the U.S., because that's the idea of building the marketplace. But as a part of this thing, besides being the only one in the United States, so hopefully people will come from not just around Florida, but all around the country and from other places, and being an internationally sanctioned event, we're hoping to attract people from not only Florida, but around the country and also from different parts of particularly South America to come to the event and in terms of coming here. But one of the things that we have as a part of our program, again, to build the interest, is we have an amateur grassroots competition so people can actually sign up and play beach tennis as a part of this thing. And so we it's not going to be televised. It'll be, I'm sure, covered by the media, but we want to build from a grassroots level the opportunity, because just to give you an idea, when our partner in Brazil did this event in Copacabana Beach, the beach tennis event, they had over 1,000 people locally enter this amateur competition. We don't expect that to happen in year one, but we really want to build we're looking to build something here on a long-term basis and try to grow it. And I do want to mention that it is going to also be sanctioned by the International Soccer Federation. You know, so it's ITF, it's called, So we will be sanctioned. There will be legitimate tournaments. And the reason for that, that I say it's important, is in everything that they do throughout the year to promote their schedule and all their materials, you know, the city of Miami Beach would be listed. That would be the name of the event, because we're not looking for you just to be the host. We're looking for this to be a way to showcase Miami Beach. So what we've been able to do on the dollars, because I know you mentioned that as a thing, normally to get these events on network TV, both in Brazil and the United States, it requires a huge financial investment to buy the time to get on. What we've been able to do, myself for the U.S. and my partner in Brazil, is leverage the relationships and sell them on the excitement of building something special and having them be the exclusive network to cover this thing. So we've been able to basically get them to help fund this thing, to make it feasible in terms of doing it. We'll certainly pursue other mechanisms. What we don't want to do is lose the opportunity to get it both on CBS and to be the first and only sanctioned event in the United States in the tennis side.
Wait just a minute. Can we,
So the ask right now is $300,000. Any way of potentially whittling that down as you get sponsorships or other things?
Well, I know that we're having a call later today and hoping to get some, at least to cut it down by 50 from a call that we're having. Was the is it? Do you is
the VCA?
Wait,
went
just
put
a
in
minute,
50%,
Rose, Commissioner.
Right?
Please, wait. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you 50% or 50,000?
50,000 we're hoping to get 50, from them. That's, okay. I mean, a realistic figure. We're looking for doing, but they're not going to be the title sponsor. You know, we're looking for, we don't want to have a brand title sponsor the event. You know, we're looking to have the city to show, the whole idea is to showcase the city. And if we're going to do this event anywhere in the United States, it seems the most logical place to do it would be the city of Miami Beach.
Okay. Sorry. Commissioner Rosen-Gonzalez, you're recognized.
I mean, it's fine for us to see this the first year, but you've got to go out and get sponsors after this. We don't want to necessarily be that person. We want you to go get sponsors, be self-sufficient. I mean, we'll help in the future, but we don't want to be the partner. We want to program this. We want you to go out and get this funding.
That's what I do for a living. So Bruce produces events. I provide sponsorship. So I've been doing this for 40 plus years, and so we have to start somewhere with someone in the initial year being the leader. But the idea of are we going to go out and look for additional corporate support to help produce the thing? The answer to that is absolutely yes. But to start the event and make it official, you need to have the lead sponsor. What we've been able to do is cut that in half by getting the networks to help contribute towards this.
One more thing. How many people are you expecting for this event, and how many hotel rooms do you think will be occupied?
Well,
we hope that
in terms of actual hard seating, to have somewhere between 3,000 to 5,000 hard seats. But obviously, there's standing room and all. We hope that we'll get like 10,000 people a day to come to this event.
I think that's significant.
It's a lot smaller than we had in Brazil, but it should be something that is a huge following.
To give you an idea, Miami Beach Live is $3 million, and we're getting about, 5,000 people per concert. Here you're going to spend $300,000, and during this week of events, we're going to get, 10,000 people. So I think it's for this first year to seed it like this, and then we'll see what happens. After that, we're going to have some data. Like, did we get 10,000 people, and we can move forward? And if it was successful, then you're going to get a sponsor.
Well, hopefully, we're not asking you to make this financial commitment on a multi-year basis. We hope that when we come back for the following year, we'll be able to dramatically change that, because we'll have companies that want to step up. You may say, we want to keep the title, maybe for a lesser level, but, are we going to go and look for corporate sponsors? Yes. But first we need to tell them that the event is going to happen and the city is going to be behind it. So I think to kick it off, we would like to have the event called by, the city's name. But understand that what I do for a living is I'm involved in bringing national brands and companies in to sponsor events, I just recently did the Andre Bocelli tour that's going on here. It played in Miami, the American Airlines Arena, and I brought in the title sponsor for that show. So we are going to look for sponsors, but before we can speak to other people, we first need to know that the city's behind it.
Thank you. Commissioner Fernandez, are you good, or you want to jump in before I get back in?
I'm fine with this. I think it's consistent with everything we're pushing for. I think it'd be prudent to see first here what are the numbers on the actual beds that we get in head, because that's ultimately what we want to see. Media impressions are great, but ultimately for the month of March, our end goal is beds and heads in Miami Beach. So heads and beds. There we go. You knew what I meant.
That's my question too. How many actual players will be participating in the support?
So
how many teams and how many members?
So on the tennis side, there's 32 teams.
Okay.
Each with two male and two female players. So 4 times 32.
Okay.
And on the soccer, the national teams are 15 members of both the U.S., 15 for the U.S., 15 for Brazil. So there's 30 members. We're, again, part of our expense is also covering the travel, the hotel, the per diems, all that stuff that's on us, for these different people. But because of the logistics, again, of putting it between the time they're in South America and Europe, it actually works out well for us. But that's how many participants. And when I said 10,000 people, by the way, I was talking about 10,000 people per day, not total, for the 5 days there. And again, that's very small to what it is in Brazil, but, it takes time to build the sport. But we're...
Okay, so about 150 players plus maybe their families might come with them.
Coaches,
and
staff.
Coaches and staff and so forth. So now you said that the TV was definite. So would you be willing to accept our participation contingent upon that? So that because we just had a situation where we did something recently and it was supposed to be televised. And then
100%.
The cameras didn't show up.
No,
and we
I'm
didn't
just
get
saying,
what
we
paid for.
Again, we haven't worked together before, but yeah. Absolutely 100%. We make it contingent. So I want you to know that I've been speaking directly to the head of programming for CBS Network, who I've worked with for many, many years. So it's not an interest. It's a definite. And we would certainly make it contingent on both the U.S. TV with CBS and also with TV Globo. And hopefully we'll get more than that. But those two are 100% firm, and we would certainly be willing to make that contingency.
And also I understand Aspen is going to start on
that first weekend in March,
right?
As well.
And they have a footprint on the sand, I think, at 17th Street. So is there a conflict there, or because – and is the task force, the winter party, is that – that Sunday before, or is it on the 5th?
It's on Sunday the 5th.
It is. So we could potentially having three things going, but...
Right. So what we asked today, the administration would like for it not to make a decision. Let us continue working with the event organizers, see if they can get that grant and sponsorship funding, because we are talking, we have the RFLI out that we're reviewing right now. We're talking to Miami Marathon, Mayhem, lot of different entity. So before we make a decision, allow us that time to continue our due diligence before making a decision today.
Where is this played on the hard pack on the sand? Is that where it would be?
Which, I'm sorry.
No, the beach tennis, is it on the hard pack? Because I don't know how you'd play in the soft sand.
I don't have the answer to that.
They would handle that. That's not a problem.
So they put up, they put a surface down or something?
They put the surface on top of the sand.
I got it. Okay.
And look, I understand what you just heard here. Our thing is this. I'm just being honest and all this stuff. We didn't want to rush. We had first talked about maybe trying to do this. This is a month or two ago in the fall. We don't want to do this in Russia. We want to do this right. And then if you're really looking at March to be a wellness thing and kind of change the image, the culture and all that, this is a great fit. Just by good coincidence, it works out to be the best date for the tennis, and we've been able to make the dates work for the soccer. But what we don't want to do is have someone else get in there in front of us and do it in another city. And what we don't want to do is lose. And when you ask me about the commitment from CBS, I don't want CBS to put this event in the middle of the night or in the middle of the morning when people aren't watching. I want to do it when people see it, because if we're really looking to build something with you on a long-term basis. We want to do it right the first year.
Okay.
So that's okay. That's the only reason I say to you, they all know that we're presenting today, and you know, obviously we hope that you'll be supportive. We're, again, I think a good question, not looking for a long-term financial commitment, because the economics will change, hopefully, if we build this into a very successful event the first
okay.
year.
Okay, thank you. So let me ask a question, because Commissioner Rosen-Gonzalez talked about sponsorships, and I am very interested in that as well. You know, we have a contract, the city has a contract with Pepsi and Red Bull. Are those companies, it seems like those entities are typically would want to be involved in something like this to be a sponsor.
Very logical to tie in our partners of at ACT would be have worked with these people before. They would be approaching them. I would be approaching some other, you know, quality national companies and brands where something like this would make sense. So absolutely, there's a lot of companies that we think that would be logical tie-ins, but we don't want to go to them yet on a maybe event, because, you know, you can't go to someone and say, well, you make this commitment if the event happens or takes place. So but I think there are a lot of brands that make sense, and there's been a lot that have been involved here, and there's a lot that make perfect sense for beach sports, you know. So we'd obviously target who we approached on companies that make sense, and it's a good demographic.
Okay, let me tell you where we're at and what our timeline is and what's possible.
Okay, thank you.
So the item's not in the budget right now. We'd have to put it in the budget. We've closed out our budget workshop, and we've given guidance to staff to prepare our final budget, and that will be presented to us on September 14th. So this committee can make recommendations to the full commission, but the full commission would have to approve it if it's part of the budget. That's the way it works. So we can't give a final approval here, but you can certainly get an indication on where the body's going to stand, given that there are four members up here and we have six voting members right now. So I'm inclined to give you a chance to work it out. We've got a lot of details that need to be worked out. I don't know how my colleagues feel, but I think you got to go find at least $50,000 worth of sponsorship plus the VCB potentially, so that we can come in around $200,000 the first year. That would be my inclination. And then I would want to see in September, before I make a final commitment, that you have either a letter from CBS mm-hmm. or that you, if we give you the funding, that you sign a contract with us, understanding that our financial commitment is contingent upon the televised airing, because I don't want to be caught again in that situation. You understand?
I do, clearly.
So that's kind of where, that's kind of what we could do, but the members will have to agree to what I'm thinking. Commissioner Ariel, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, first of all, thanks for, you know, considering our city for the event. It fits with a lot of themes that I think a lot of us support in terms of health and wellness and activation during the month of March. It's good positive tourism. You know, before I fully commit to the dollars, please, you know, work really hard to shrink the ask. And then, Lisette, as you work with this team, you know, get a list of commitments, because what will happen next year when you come back and potentially ask for money, I'd like to have a scorecard to see what you promised and what you delivered. Because we all get amnesia up here. And so it would be nice to, you know, be able to see how many people attended the event, what kind of, you know, media impressions we got, you know, what kind of write-ups, sponsorships, you know, we saw from this, and whether it was a worthwhile investment.
And heads in beds, too. You know, it looks
yes,
like we
absolutely.
Could potentially
that,
have
that,
we would definitely
give
a detailed report, because that's what we do for any title sponsor, and just tell them, like, how many people, the TV ratings, and everything else. But that's fine. Thank you for...
Let me just ask, is there any reason we can't do this in North Beach? Further up? Because we're always trying to activate North Beach.
I'm sorry. Good morning, commissioners. As far as I know, this was the identified location from the provider. I don't know that they were willing to move. I guess we could have that conversation.
Would you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Give North Beach some love.
I think we should definitely look at it over the next. That's a good idea. I don't know if CBS would, you know, they may want to be in South Beach. I don't know.
They care.
Yeah.
Still Miami Beach, so.
Yeah. Right. So, Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, while you stepped away for just a moment, I was explaining sort of the mechanics of what could happen, because this is just a committee, a subcommittee of the full commission, and we can make a recommendation, but we're going to have it as part of the final vote on the 14th of September. I really like the idea, and I'm glad you brought it, and Commissioner Fernandez. So we have some more work that needs to be done, and I was also saying I'd like them to find $50,000 in sponsorship in addition to perhaps the VCB so that the city's commitment would land somewhere around $200,000 at the max. And also they've agreed, since the television is a definite commitment, they've agreed that any funding that we'd reimburse from the city would be contingent upon that, so that we don't get a situation where we thought we were going to get television and we don't. So,
in addition, Mr. Chair, if they could also work with the producer who ends up getting the award for Miami Beach Live 2023.
Okay, great. So with, go ahead, Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez.
No, this also needs like a professional presentation. It needs to be defined. We need to know the specific ask, and this we need to do some work. So yeah, I'm all, whatever, you know.
So if you'll move as I suggested, and I will second, and we will, so we are agreeing to continue this conversation. Looking at a maximum potential commitment of $200,000 contingent upon TV. You're going to do some additional work to make sure that there's no conflict with Aspen and their footprint on the sand. And if there is, how that might be able to resolve. And you're also going to look at potential for North Beach. And then, John, we're not meeting as a committee before the September 14th. So
yeah, we're meeting the 30th. And so we have hearings on the 14th and 28th.
The 30th of September.
Correct. So yeah. The 14th, you know, we have several items that we were going to bring some additional information for. So if that information is available, I would suggest that we go ahead and try to hear it
so
the 14th.
Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, it's your item. Would you be willing to put an item on the September 14th agenda so that we could bring this up and discuss it, because this committee, we won't be meeting again. So, and with that, this committee can move it back to the commission so the commission can take action.
That's fine, and it's our item. Commissioner Fernandez, are you okay with that, hearing it in September?
I'm fine with that.
Okay, so move to the full commission in September.
One last ask. Yeah, sure. Another location would be between 6th and 8th Streets, which is where we typically get more of our visitors and attendance. And so if it works out that we can add it to the Miami Beach Live footprint, I would like that flexibility as well.
I think that's a great idea. And those are all things that the staff should work on and come back with a recommendation. So we'll move it out of committee then unanimously and move it back to be heard on the 14th for a final decision. So you're going to have a final decision. The 14th will be the first. The second vote is the 30th, John?
The 28th.
The 28th. So, but if we vote on the 14th, I'm sure you're going to get the vote on the 28th.
Okay.
So that'll be. We've got two more votes on our budget, but that's where we are.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We'll close this item. All right. John, let's go ahead and take up number one. I think I know that your primary person is not here, but I wanted to, I know this is Commissioner Fernandez had this item, and I had heard some issues related to this. So, Commissioner Fernandez, did you want to just tee it up and tell us what you were thinking?
Yeah, the quality of life in our community is being deteriorated a lot of times by these charters that operate in our waterways, and you know, oftentimes they're doing it without the proper approvals and the proper licenses from our city. At the end of the day, it's some of these sometimes leave from the city of Miami, make their way up navigable waters up to our city, and then end up conducting business and picking up people in our city. And it's affecting areas like South of Fifth and other parts of our city. And so I like some input from staff as to the process for the licensing of these boat operators and how we can better handle this issue in the future. What we could do to support the administration in better addressing this issue.
Great. Okay, so I'll take a shot at it. As the commissioner mentioned, the lead on this item is not available, but I think we have the staff here where we can do this justice. So as you know, over the last several years, there's been an explosion of activity on the water. I'll remind you that in this year's budget, the proposed budget, we have enhancements for Marine Patrol and the fireboat, so that will help with enforcement. We have been working at the marina on the code side and on the asset management side to try to at least be able to better manage the folks who actually have a BTR with the City of Miami Beach. Tom, I'd like to ask you, if you don't mind, to try to summarize some of that. And process-wise, we also have Sasha Gonzalez here, our customer service manager, who can help with that part of the equation.
Good morning. Go ahead. You're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Tom Curator, Assistant Director, Co-Compliance. Let me take a step back. You know, during COVID and stuff, we had a lot of activity on the waterways. You know, people, because they were inside, they get on the boats and charter boats and stuff. What we did is we upped our forces at the Miami Beach Marina. Since January 17, 2021 until July 24th, we gave over a total of 573 violations. This had a domino effect. So this backed the, you know, backed the special magistrate's office, because people were appealing them because they didn't know they needed one, which they do now. And also it backed the Marine Board. They had to go in front of the Marine Board. So what we did was that's the reason for that. We worked with Property Management Division, who oversees the Marina Suntex. And right now there's no new BTR applications for permit slips that are going to be approved at the marina unless a slip becomes available, because before they just had everybody there together. Also, charter boats without a permit docking slip, they must have a landing slip agreement before they can drop off passengers. And also, no BTRs will be issued to charter boat businesses without first obtaining a permit docking space or landing slip at the marina. In addition, what we did is we met with the marina, and we met with the Real Deal. And the Real Deal, actually, not the newspaper, the Real Deal does a lot of for the Fountain Blue. And we met with them, and they went over their contracts also, and they looked at people docking up there also. In addition, they put fences up different places on the Indian Creek, because we go there also. So we are working on it. And I don't want to, you know, when you're batting down the hatches, no pun intended, and work together, things do get done.
So let me just, I think use of the waterways is probably controlled by the state, right? So unless someone's docking here, we don't have any control over whether someone's doing business. Is that right?
That's right. The need to obtain a BTR is when a charter company is doing business on city property or within touching city property. So this is where the enforcement efforts for not having BTRs, you know, really kicked up during COVID when we shut down clubs and bars, and so the party moved to the water, and as a result of all of those violations, then we saw the significant increase in BTR applications. I haven't spoken to the staffer who's primarily responsible for this, but it's mentioned in the memo that since April, when the new conditions for that the marina is imposing in terms of you have to have a permanent slip if you're going to get a permanent BTR, or you have to have a landing slip agreement. Since April, since they've instituted that requirement at the marina, we haven't seen one single BTR application. So the numbers are going down, and it's something to monitor. And in addition, and I know Commissioner Fernandez and Rosen Gonzalez are familiar with it since it came up at Neighborhoods this week, but we were directed to draft a letter from the administration to the City of Miami to look at ways to collaborate with the City of Miami in terms of how they patrol and work with charter companies and giving us notice of issues, and maybe we can come up with an interlocal agreement to somehow address these issues in a more comprehensive manner.
Go ahead, Commissioner Fernandez.
Yeah, and just to build upon the last point by the city attorney, you know, as to the City of Miami aspect, just for clarity of this body and the public, the concern is that they're leasing out spaces. They're giving up. They're giving slips at Bayside and other city facilities over there, and so they're giving slips over there. Those people then are coming over here, violating noise levels and other and causing other issues that then we have to enforce, and then they go back to the city of Miami. And then the city of Miami keeps on renewing their permits and their leases without checking with us to see if there's any issues here and vice versa. And we should probably, given the waters that we share, have some sort of collaboration like that to look after each other's interests. We protect you, but you protect us. And we should probably have something like that going on. In addition to that, part of my concern is not perhaps anymore as much what is happening in the marinas, but what's happening in the residential neighborhoods. I've received concerns from people who are seeing an increase of commercial marine activity in single-family neighborhoods. I have heard concerns from people who live along the Biscayne Waterway about single-family homes being used for illegal jet ski rentals and other activities like that. And that's a big problem when that's happening in waterways in residential areas, because kids go into the waterways also, and you know, families use these waterways, especially when they're in residential areas, and these jet skis and these other activities happen sometimes at very high speed, and it's part of what I want to see is control and staff. I don't know what suggestions we could have for that. We focused a lot about our city marinas, but how do we focus a little bit more as to what's happening in the residential waterways?
Well, I know Marine Patrol has been working with the Coast Guard. We work with DERM also, and we work with actually environmental. Actually, case in point, last week we got a complaint on Allison, like the Allison Island waterway. It was a structure there. And what people are getting innovative now, what they're doing is they're putting the structures in the water, getting the boats, bringing them to the structure, and renting the jet skis out in the middle of the water. So what happened with that was they were parked by, I think, the Alamo Hotel at one time. Durham went out there and gave them a violation. They moved it. We found it in the water. Marine Patrol towed it. Right now it's up on the North Beach Station there. So we're finding stuff, you know, as we go along. But we're out there with Marine Patrol. They call us. But mostly it's Marine Patrol, and they have a great relationship, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but with Coast Guard also. So we did get violations out in the private property, and we do go on the boats with Marine Patrol, and that's how we're addressing it. And as things come up, we address them, you know, with that, and we're putting more enforcement on it.
And Mr. Chair, I'm very optimistic to see how this continues evolving and the improvements we make as we put enhancements in Marine Patrol. I think what happens in the next fiscal year will probably help guide our policy making with this, because we are allocating more dollars towards that. And so I'd be happy to see how those investments help yield this issue in our waterways, unless you all have any other recommendations regarding this.
So are we actively trying to do some MOU with my city of Miami, or that's a potential, or
that's definitely a potential. We were asked to write a letter to and I believe that city of Miami, and I don't know the details. I wasn't at the committee meeting myself, but the city of Miami, there's some meeting coming up soon where these issues related to charter boats will be brought up, and we wanted to be part of that conversation.
And has the letter been written, or it's going to
be? It's being written now. This just happened this week at Wednesday night's neighborhoods committee meeting.
Okay. So why don't, if you're open to it, why don't we just continue the item until October, and then we'll get feedback and so forth, and then
sure,
we'll see where we're at. So, John, let's close this and move that to October. And then also I have noticed that we're going to defer item 9, Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez and Commissioner regarding the North Sea South Beach Music Festival. We'll hear that in, let's move that to the September, that's the next meeting. Because I understand the person that was going to present didn't get the presentation ready. So we'll defer that till September. That's what you want, right, Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Okay, with that, we've got a time certain at 10:30 on the waste hauler. So this is item 2 and item 5. So we'll call both items up. And so what we're going to do here, we started this item about 3 months ago, and then we asked staff to go back and do some additional work. So we are going to hear from staff first with your additional analysis, and we'll give you up to 10 minutes to do that. Let's let them get their presentation done, and then we'll ask any questions after that. We don't normally have public hearing at the committee, but I'm going to open this up for public hearing because I want to hear from the public. And I know that you also had a public hearing, I think, recently in early July. You can speak about that as well. So with that, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Richardson, Vice Chair Ariola, Commissioners Rosen, Gonzalez, and Fernandez, City Attorney Paz, and CFO Woodruff, thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. Like the chair said, I am going to give you an update on the last presentation that we gave as of April the 29th. So if we could put that presentation up, please. So if we could go to the next slide. So there were two takeaways that we took from the last presentation to you. Obviously, we had put out online surveys, and we got a very low response. We only received 15 responses back from the online survey at that time. And also, the data benchmarking that we used, the data sampling, we used 13 municipalities. The chair asked us to go back and ground truth and obtain additional information. So I'm going to speak to each of these points. So I'm going to jump first to the industry forum that we held for the participation of the online survey. Next, please. So as the chair alluded to, we had an industry forum on July 7th at the Miami Beach Golf Clubhouse. It was attended. We had about 40 folks, 32 sign on the sign-in sheet. I know Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez attended, as well as Commissioner Minor attended at the very beginning. And if you can go to the next slide, please. So we had a brief presentation to the community to provide them an update on our contract and where we are in the process, and also to get input from both the community, industry, as far as what works, what doesn't work, all that. We also provided surveys, hard copies at the meeting, as well as an ability to do online surveys. And I'll show you in a minute the online surveys. We did get good participation on the online surveys. We had over 140. Chair, I think I shared with you those yesterday. If you go to the next slide, please. This is a sample of the survey. There were 12 questions. It asks everything from who's your provider to what kind of recycling services, what kind of containers, and then any comments that they wanted to proffer on the survey. The link is in the bottom. It was a SurveyMonkey survey. So, like I said, we had good participation, about 140. And then notice question 3 has very specific questions, the quality of service, cost of service, going from great to no opinion, and what is most important to each of the members that participate in the survey. So if you can go to the next slide, please. In question 3, the first question was, how satisfied are you with the following aspects of your trash and recycling services? And based on the participation of the surveys, this is the breakdown. So in terms of poor to average, about 66% said quality of service is poor to average. And cost of service, poor to average was about 69%. And then good to great, 33% on the quality of service, and about 18% on the cost of the service. And then what's most important to you, most important, as you can see from the survey, having the ability to hire another waste services provider garnered about 41% of the responses. So I'm going to move on now to the data sampling portion. Next, please. But first, just a brief reminder for the committee members on the types of contract vehicles that are available. So essentially there are three: the open market. Open market essentially means that there's no restriction on the number of franchise operators that can be in the city. So it's open, broad-based. And you'll see now, as we go through the data, that there are areas that use this type of solid. So each generator, solid waste generator, business or multifamily property will contract with whatever provider is out there. Our code, I just do want to remind, our code currently does not allow for the open market of type of agreement. It has to be either exclusive or non-exclusive. The next one is non-exclusive, and you can permit multiple franchisees, and it can be organized by a geographic area or citywide. This is the current system that we have in Miami Beach. This is the contract that was awarded back in 2014 that, as a reminder, the commission did provide a one-year, month-to-month extension at the last July 20th meeting, since our current contract, current franchises expire in September 30th. Also want to point out that under Section 90229 of the City Code, it does allow up to five franchisees. In 2014, the City Commission chose to select three. One of those three was acquired by one of the current two franchisee operators. And then under the exclusive model, this is a franchise who's only awarded the exclusive right to operate in the area. And prices are pre-negotiated with the city, and then they are capped based on CPI. As an example, our residential franchise is an exclusive contract, and it is capped. It has a CPI cap of 3% per annum, and that was awarded in 2019. And the first, it's set to first expire in 2023. So, next slide, please. So we went ahead and went back, as the chair wanted us to really look at data. So we looked at the Tri-County area. We looked at 91 municipalities in the Tri-County area. That's Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County. And then we looked at other 48 other municipalities in various counties, such as Pinellas, Lee, Collier, and Monroe County. So we did a total of 130, just querying them what kind of contracts they use. 139 municipalities were reviewed. Next, please. So this kind of is very telling. This chart is very telling. So, for example, and I'm going to go through each of the tri-county counties to show you which municipalities have what kind of contract. But essentially, Miami-Dade County, out of the 30 cities that responded to us, 15 are on the open market system. Eight are exclusive, four non-exclusive, and then three are provided by the city itself. Broward and Palm Beach are completely different. Broward and Palm Beach tend to favor the exclusive model. As you can see, out of the 28 and 33 respectively, 21 and 25 are exclusive, and then one and two non-exclusive. And then the other counties, Pinellas, Lee, Collier, and Monroe County, seem to also favor the exclusive model. And Pinellas County has a high amount of city-provided services with some of the municipalities. Next. This is just a graphical representation of the Tri-County area, so adding the numbers for Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County, as you can see, we have out of the open market is about represents about 21% of the Tri-County area, non-exclusive about 8%, exclusive 59%, and city-provided services about 12% out of the 91 for the Tri-County area.
Joe, go ahead and start wrapping up. So you got a couple of minutes. And
okay,
let's get
very
to,
quickly. So going you. Next, Miami-Dade, as you can see, these are the municipalities. The chart represents all the cities that have the open market. As you can see, some the major cities, non-exclusive, two of the big cities are Hialeah and City of Miami, as well as City of Doral and Miami Beach have the non-exclusive. Next. Going to Broward, as you can see, most of the municipalities favor the exclusive franchise model, with the exception of two large cities, City of Fort Lauderdale and Hollywood. They are with the open market concept. Palm Beach County, same thing. It's mostly the exclusive model, and as well as Palm Beach County proper itself, which is divided into six different zones, which that's how they divvy up the county, unincorporated county. Other Florida, next, please. other Florida counties by percentages. That's just a breakdown of the numbers from the other 48 counties, and you can see, again, favoring the exclusive model. So let me just go ahead and summarize. Mr. Chair, I know we're pressed for time. The industry, next, please. The industry forum was held on July the 7th. We received a total of over 140 responses to the survey. On the average, 65% of the participants rated quality and cost of services average or poor, and having the ability to hire another provider and getting the lowest cost totaled about 70% of what's most important to the respondents. Next, please. In terms of the data, again, we reviewed 139 municipalities, 91 in the Tri-County area, 48 in other counties. Miami-Dade County, 15 out of 30, or 50%, favored the open market concept. Broward and Palm Beach favored the exclusive model, 46 out of the 61 for those two counties, or 75%. Pinellas and Lee, same thing, 69%. The non-exclusive has the smallest market share, with 5%. So next, this is the for your consideration. Next slide, please. So options for your consideration. We continue with the non-exclusive franchise agreements in the next round. The current, like I said, current contract expires on September 30th, but you awarded a month-to-month extension to carry us to 2023. And again, the code does allow up to five franchisees to be awarded. Consider an exclusive franchise agreement. This is, again, similar to the model that we have for our residential customers, which is an exclusive agreement. We do not recommend the open model because, again, we a grid system, traffic would be a horrendous nightmare if we had unlimited number of haulers driving throughout the city. And it would also require an amendment to the city code. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much. So, members, do you have any questions to staff before I take public comment? All right, Lynn, we'll do public comment then. So anyone wishing to speak on the item will come forward and state your name. And if you're affiliated with a business, give us the name of the business. And you'll have 2 minutes. And, Mr. Paz, you'll be the timekeeper. And let us know if there's anyone online that wishes to speak. We'll take those as well. Okay, Mr. Llorente, you are recognized.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioners Mike Llorente, LSN, we represent Waste Management. Waste Management is the largest waste hauler in the country, the largest commercial hauler in Miami Beach, and according to Fortune magazine, one of the world's most admired companies in 2022. If the city were to issue an RFP for an exclusive commercial franchise, we would probably participate, but we think that's a bad idea, and here's why. Number one, commercial properties are not one-size-fits-all, particularly in Miami Beach, which has a ton of ingress, egress issues, alleys, tight corridors. You have some commercial customers that are very easy to service. You grab the trash from the container without getting out of the truck. You have many others that are very challenging to service. You have to park the truck, grab the container, roll it 200 feet on an incline to get that trash into the truck. Under an exclusive franchise model, haulers would have to give fixed unit pricing for all of these units, which are clearly not standard. We don't think that makes sense in Miami Beach and would likely result in higher pricing for many, if not most, customers. Number two, no one really does this. And we respect the work done by the city's consultant, but the fact is that there are not many examples of cities moving from a competitive, non-exclusive system to an exclusive system. In the city, consumers have had choice for at least 30 years, and they like that choice. There are challenges if you try to move from a competitive, non-exclusive system to an exclusive system. And I'll jump right to that. One of those challenges is that if waste management, for example, were to win an exclusive franchise in the city of Miami Beach, we would have to deliver a new container to every customer that we currently do not service. We'd have to get new trucks to service those routes. That could take us a year. We currently have 61% market share. So, and I'll wrap up, Mr. Chair, and I know the time is tight, but there are tremendous logistical concerns in moving from a non-exclusive franchise system to an exclusive franchise system, which is one of the reasons why you do not see this type of activity or policy in any other city across the state. Thank you. And we're here, I should mention, Jason Neal from Waste Management is here. He knows more about trash than anyone I know, and we're here to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak in public comment? Go ahead. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you. How could I not get up after that wonderful introduction? That's the best introduction I've had, I think, in my whole life. I would echo some of the same comments. Miami Beach is unique. Whether there are other exclusive franchises in other areas is almost irrelevant here, because Miami Beach, I don't think your goal really is to be like every other community. You're not like a Westin or a Sunrise or a Miramar, not knocking those communities, but just the challenges are far different in this community. Another thing I'd like to point out, the survey, I think there was 140 responses is what I heard. And, you know, there are different ways data can be interpreted. And one of the things I looked at was some of these charts. Get glasses here. Age is hell. On some of these charts, for instance, if you look at the summary of results, there's different ways of grouping the data and the results. So while a comment is made, 65% rated quality and cost of service average or poor, if you flip over to page 6, if you look at quality of service, you know, you could look at it another way with your glass half full, and that is 64% rated the quality of service average, good, or great. And likewise, the cost of the service, you know, no one likes to pay for garbage. No one likes to pay for insurance. Everyone thinks it's too expensive. It is expensive, but there's reasons for that. But even so, 45% said it was poor. But if you look at average, good, or great, 42% rated it that. And if you add in those with no opinion, that's 54%. So the majority of people did not say the cost was poor. So in closing, Miami Beach is unique. We would participate in just about any type solicitation the city would prefer to launch. However, I don't think exclusivity is the best match for this particular city. Costs have gone through the roof. We use compressed natural gas in our trucks. That's gone up 184% over the past year, and diesel's about doubled. So, and there's driver shortages, and my time is out. Thank you.
I have a question.
Sure.
So I assume that you have contracts with some cities that on an exclusive basis.
We do.
So can you educate us on why those cities make that decision? When I looked through the chart, it looked like a lot of the smaller ones. Does that city size have anything to do with that decision?
It could be a function of size, geography, as well as physical constraints. Where you have more homogeneous service and more homogeneous communities, it tends to be easily standardized. Where you have Miami Beach with totally different challenges, you know, as Michael pointed out, you could have the same number of cubic yards serviced to two different customers. One, you have to go 7 days a week. One, you go twice a week. Well, you can't look at the yardage rate. It doesn't mean anything because you have a lot more trips in an expensive truck, and you could be rolling it up a ramp versus just picking it up without getting out of the truck. It could be two guys versus one. One may have bulk service, one may not. One may have recycling, one may not. There's all these constraints. There's the length of the contract, how many properties they have, all of these things. And the other disadvantage with exclusivity is you could have a block of property owners who own multiple properties here and elsewhere, and if you choose a franchise that does not operate in other areas, now they're stuck with multiple points of contact. So generally, most people who have multi-unit properties prefer to deal with one single hauler, and so that is lost in that as well. So we are not anti-exclusivity by any stretch. We have several exclusive franchises. It tends to be more popular in other areas, and again, I just don't think it's the best fit for this community.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Do we have anybody online?
No virtual callers.
Okay. Hi, how are you? Give us your name, please.
Good morning. My name is Grant Smith. I'm here representing Waste Connections of Florida, the other current franchise hauler.
You're recognized.
Thank you very much, sir. We have been working here on Miami Beach for decades. We know this city, and I'd like to echo what my colleague Jason Neal said from Waste Management, is that Miami Beach is a unique place to work. We're honored to work here, but it also takes a lot of work to understand what it takes to work here. This is one of the few communities in Florida that still uses rear load service, which means that you have to back down alleys. And those kinds of things come about because of the unique set of circumstances with alleys and different narrow roadways and tight places where the dumpsters are put. So all of that makes this place a unique place to operate, one. Two, on the survey, and I did attend the open forum at the Miami Beach Country Club a couple weeks ago, and the sense that I got from there was that most people wanted choice. And I think that came through in the survey results. What I saw, took away from the survey results, was that over 70% of the people wanted the opportunity to have a choice between who to go with. Their choice could be as much as, I like this company, I like blue containers, I don't like green containers. Who knows what that is? But they wanted choice. And so that, I think that came through in your survey. I also believe that of the thousands of customers that there are here in Miami Beach, only 114 chose to participate. And by doing so, I think you skew to the folks who really feel strongly about it. The others who were maybe satisfied didn't feel the need to do that. But what came through is choice. And we're here to say we would participate as well if it was an exclusive opportunity, but we would also, welcome the opportunity to keep it in the same way and have the competition between companies. Thank you very much.
Who's up next?
Me.
Hi. Give us your name and if you're associated with a company and
sure.
You're recognized.
I'm Tabitha Pennington. I'm with Miami Quality.
Pull the microphone
Management.
A little bit closer to you.
I'm Tabitha Pennington. I'm with Miami Quality Management. We've been here since 2005. Our employees are beach residents. Every property that we represent is a beach property. So we have give or take 40 to 50 associations, and we also work with four of our competitors quite a bit dealing with these properties. The issue that we have is that we understand that you're talking about commercial service, but your residential service only covers single-family homes and regular apartment buildings. Condominiums are considered commercial, right down to a three-unit condominium. And one of the problems is that they get locked into these contracts with the haulers, and they can't get out of them. The contract goes, it auto-renews, they change management. I have properties right now that we've inherited from other companies that are paying liquidated damages, for years to try to get out of contracts between one or two haulers. The property damage that happens is in the thousands of dollars each year for various properties, and they don't pay for that. So, you have condominium associations that are budgeting, say, $12,000, $13,000 a year for garbage service because their bill is $800 to $1,000 a month. And then at the end of the year, between overages, contamination charges, damages, so on and so forth, you end up with another $15,000 to $20,000. Now they have to budget the next year for, $20,000 to $30,000 instead of $13,000. That's a big deal. So we are more for the city having the oversight because the price would be known, and all complaints would go to one place. Right now, all complaints are going to multiple reps at least two different companies, and we have brokers in between everything. They're forced to deal with brokers to try to bring their costs down, but it doesn't always work, and you are still locked into contracts that you can't get out of. So that's what we wanted you to hear. I've had four competitors with me to come to various meetings with various people. I was at the forum in the golf course. This is something that we're seeing across the board, and I'm sure you're aware that the beach is primarily condominiums. We have single-family homes. We have apartment complexes, but most of your residents are in condominiums, and they're being strangled. So.
Yeah, let me ask a question.
Sure.
Because I know this, we have never met before, but I know this topic is very dear to you.
Right.
I know the initial 15, I think some of your buildings were six or seven of the responses of the 15.
Sure.
And that's why we wanted to go out and have more responses. You said you're dealing with brokers. So, for example, you're not dealing with the principal haulers. You're dealing with agents that are, I guess, getting contracts. Is that what you're saying?
We deal with both.
Okay.
The property managers here, and condominiums itself manage as well, they have to deal with both haulers and brokers, depending on what the situation is for that property. Some of them end up in such a hole that they are forced to go to brokers, and then they're locked into contracts with the broker and the hauler.
What is in your experience been the average length of a contract where someone's locked up? Is it three, four, 5 years?
And then it auto-renews, and oftentimes they don't catch it in time because you have to notify. Used to in the day, you could, when you took on a contract, you could send in an immediate notice that that contract would end so that a property wouldn't get locked in if they were under new management 5 years. But now you can't notify before 90 days before the end of the contract. So what happens is these things get lost in the mix while property's getting shuffled around. 5 years comes, and they're locked into another 5 years. And then if something's going wrong, they can't get out of it. There are automatic increases built into the contracts. The overages vary depending on what's going on. Like, we're seeing things. I've got board members that are calling me all the time about the drivers half-emptying the receptacles. That way, when they return, they charge an overage. You know, so I got one property that racked up $3,000 in just a couple of months that way because the overage charges were hitting them. They were emptied three times a week, and they were getting overages twice a week, you know.
Okay.
At $150.
All right, if you're able to stay, why don't you hang out a little? We may have some more questions for you, okay?
Sure.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Who's up next? Go ahead, give us your name and if you're associated with a company and you're recognized.
Good morning. My name is Eileen Damaso. I'm with Coastal Waste and Recycling. We're also one of the haulers that we collect your recycling for the city. I'm going to read, so I'm much quicker and I can get to the point. I would like to echo a lot of the comments that my competitors have said. We will participate, obviously, if there's a proposal out there. But we do agree that an exclusive franchise is probably not what's best for the customer and it is as for the city. And here's the reason why. The prices are not guaranteed to be cheaper. The capital investment for size of this city will not mean a more competitive rate. In addition, trucks, containers, and compactors, due to the supply chain, will affect the rate of the service. The other issue is that the exclusive, the presentation did not show the rates that are currently being charged to the exclusive franchises. They're not bargain rates, and there's a reason for that. Also, there's no customization of service with an exclusive franchise, just like my competitor said. All customers will pay the same rate. And in this business, 50% of your rate consists of your disposal. So if you have a store like the Bikini Brazil, it's paying the same amount of money per yard rate as Joe Stonecrap. And there's different, it's a different service. And they're all paying the same thing. And there's no negotiation. If a property manager has five properties, they can negotiate at a lower rate because they have more properties to negotiate with. So there's a lot that it leaves the business owner won't be able to be empowered to deal with their rates if it's exclusive. We do agree that, you know, the current system is working. It's just that it was limited to two and there was no choice. And obviously by the survey that was taken, 41% of those that were surveyed want a choice. And we used to have a choice. There were five haulers in the city. If one didn't like it, they would go through the process of termination and they will get the hauler that they wanted. The system was working. It's just that it was not working when there was choice was not given. Now, regarding it being taken over by an exclusive, I will point out there's some right now. Several municipalities and counties have an issue. And, for example, Lake County, Leon County, Orange County, Cape Coral, Port St. Lucie, Polk County, and Palm Coast right now have exclusive franchises, and they're trying to get rid of them because they're having service issues. There's nothing you can't change from one day to the next. It's go through a process, and you'll be 1 year stuck with a hauler that you might not want because their service is deplorable. So it's just you got to open it up for competitive, and that's what the residents, I believe, through the surveys, say that they wanted.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak? Anyone virtually?
No, Wayne must be on vacation.
I don't know what you mean.
Yeah, good zinger.
members, Commissioner Arriola, go ahead.
So I still don't know how I feel about this, so I kind of want to work backwards on what my goal is. Is, you know, I've gotten complaints from residents, particularly in condominiums, particularly small ones, that, you know, yeah, the eight unit condos, you know, those boards, you know, are comprised of, you know, whoever wants to volunteer. It's not like the big condos where you've got a lot of people to choose from. I mean, so what happens is some of them get locked into these contracts, and they can't afford it. They don't have any negotiation capability, and, you know, the the fees can be quite onerous to some of these smaller multifamily apartments. So, you know, I'm going to ask the city administration, I mean, what can we do to try to stop or mitigate some of these abuses that we hear about, you know, whether we're going exclusive or non-exclusive, you know, can we, you know, approve contracts or, you know, just mandate that they can't do these, you know, automatic renewals, multi-year contracts? You know, if you're going to have a franchise with our city, it has to be an approved contract that we've vetted to protect, you know, homeowners. Because that's really where I want to end up. I want to end up in a place where, you know, we are protecting our residents. Okay, the other thing is, I believe competition is good, okay, but left unfettered, you could have, you know, dozens of companies driving around our city and, you know, causing, I think, quite a bit of harm. That's why we have only two franchises for tow companies, and, you know, we've restricted how many waste haulers we'll have in this city. So I'm skeptical about going exclusive because I think competition is good, but I also want to try to end up in a place where we address some of the concerns we hear from residents. So do you have a thought?
Commissioner, before we do that, if you'll allow, Commissioner Fernandez, you had item five, and these I've called these items together, and it kind of relates to what Commissioner Areola was talking about. So we haven't had a chance to speak because we can't speak other here, and I'm just curious what you were thinking, and does that tie into the comments that Commissioner Areola just made?
Well, first and foremost, I am a big believer in competition. I believe that that our community is better served when you have companies competing for their business, and I have significant concerns as to the races that our residents are experiencing. And it affects, you know, not just our residents, it affects businesses, and it also goes to the root. You know, we talk a lot about workforce housing. You know, all these extra things, which are necessary utilities, make affordability in Miami Beach more prohibitive. You know, one resident that I was speaking with recently was paying with one company $4,500 a month and changed companies and now is paying $800 a month. All right, from $4,500 a month and now paying $800 a month. And so I strongly feel we need to have some sort of better oversight while allowing for there to be a non-exclusive system in place. But we need to rein in how much these fees can go up without commission approval. And I think that that's something we need to look at. There are also a lot of arbitrary fines that our consumers, our residents, and taxpayers are being charged. And there's no process for these fines to be appealed. And then what happens is that when the consumer decides not to pay some of these arbitrary fines, the city comes out, and now we fine them because the waste hauler stopped providing service. And so that's one aspect of what I have concerns about. I think we need to have a stronger role in quality control. In other words, a lot of times, if you're dealing with a broker, if your service is through a broker, now you cannot contact the waste hauler directly. So if there's issues with your service, you can't talk to the waste hauler. You have a broker in the middle. You know what? Perhaps there should be a line at the city so that we can have more oversight and more control on the service that our residents are receiving. And my last concern in this is really how we prevent the big companies from eating up the little company. That ends up creating a problem then for the consumer. A lot of times I've heard of situations in which the consumer has left the big company and has sought the services of the smaller company. Then that smaller company ends up being bought up by that other bigger company. And now
a lot of times consumers have expressed to me frustration that they feel like they end up being retaliated against afterwards and almost held hostage. So these are some of the concerns that I have. But at the end of the day, I firmly believe we need to keep the competition, because that's ultimately, I believe, what's best for our consumers in Miami Beach.
Okay, great. So let me, I'm going to recognize you in just a second. So I'm also not going to support an exclusive. So, and Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, if, you know, we have four of us here, I don't know how you feel about it, but it would be great if we can take that off the list, and then we can start addressing some of the concerns that have been raised. But you're recognized. Go ahead.
Obviously, there's agreement up here that there needs to be a reform.
Yeah.
And we're not going into a three-year contract until some reforms are made. Okay? I'd like to commend the administration and also, you know, Cindy for coming forward and showing us what needs to happen. You know, it's even tough in a single-family home mm-hmm. when you have a bulk pickup to reach out and get somebody and get it done. And we contract directly with the city. So we already are not in these bizarre private contracts that are taking place, that are being changed, that are, you know, getting doubled and tripled in price. I mean, we're seeing some stuff go down that's just not right. So what needs to happen, whether it's two people or three people, condo associations need to be treated as residents, and they need to contract with the city. So we need to remove this private contract deal. That cannot happen anymore. They have to contract directly with the city. The city will be responsible for what's happening. Then you're not going to see doubling and tripling of prices. You are not going to see all that. And the city is going to have to work directly with Waste Connections and Waste Management. Because this type of, abuse, thank you, has been going on for too long. So I commend the administration for for coming forward with this reform. I did attend the forum, and I will tell you that what we heard across the board from many different residents were that they couldn't control the pricing. The lawyers come in afterward because, you know, these large waste management companies have, you know, they're billion-dollar companies. They come forward and they tie up these small condo associations with all of these legal fees. So what has to happen is the administration needs to negotiate or put out this RFP and however many people that are going to apply, but no longer will the private contract between condo association and waste management company, that can no longer happen. It has to be City of Miami Beach going out and choosing, we choose who we're going to do business with, and then the intermediary is no longer the broker. It is no longer the broker that's in between the waste. It is the city that responds. And that way, these small associations and residents across the board have the same rights in multifamily that we have in single family. And that will be the big reform that needs to take place here. That's how I see it. And I think that would be fair. I think we will see better prices for everyone. I don't think we'll see any of the shenanigans that we've been seeing. I don't think they will be able to tie anybody up in legal fees, because they're going to have to talk to these two men right here. Okay, and the broker will be eliminated, and I think we will see a tremendous reform. And Commissioner Richardson, I would hope that you would spearhead this for all the residents. You live in in South Beach in multifamily, and you know how expensive all of the rate increases are. I can't even imagine having my, you know, entering into a contract, then getting sued, not being able to get out of the contract. Commissioner Fernandez said that one company went from $4,800 to $800. So this kind of stuff, I need you to we need you to spearhead this very important reform, and hopefully you will do so.
So I will say that I agree with almost everything you said, with the exception is I don't want the city to get into the waste hauling business, because I think every one of the reforms that you mentioned we can deal with contractually. At least I'd like to deal with that first. We can even have an ombudsman at the city and things like that. This is great that we're having this conversation. So it sounds to me like we have at least consensus with four of us that we are not going to consider an exclusive. So, gentlemen, take that off your list. Okay. Now, what we
And I don't think we're going to be prepared to get this out of committee today because I think we need to do some more work on it. But I've got a couple of questions for the waste haulers, and that is I want to know a little bit more about these brokers. So is that Mr. Llorente or someone from Waste Management or Waste Connections? Could you speak to the relationship you have with brokers and how someone can contact if they're having concerns or if they can only speak to the broker? Who wants to? I think you're with Waste Connections.
I am with Waste Connections.
Give us your name again, sir.
Grant Smith.
Thank you.
We have no direct relationships with the brokers. So meaning a property, anybody can decide that they want somebody else to represent them in these kinds of negotiations like they would for janitorial services or something, you know, like that. So the brokers will come to us. They'll come to Waste Management and say, hey, who's going to give the best price? And then we enter into a relationship either with the condominium association or with the broker. And that's how the relationship works. But the brokers are not ours. So if the condominium association is in a bad contract with the broker, we would never know. That's something between them and the broker. And then if the condominium association's in a contract with us, they would deal directly with us for all of the issues that they're having. But the broker in between is something that we don't control. And that's a relationship that the private business has with another private business who comes out looking for one of our companies to do work for them.
But why do you work with brokers? Do you not have a large enough sales force?
Of course we do. That's not our decision. That's the decision of your resident and your buildings to work with a broker and not to work directly with us. We would love for them to contract directly with us. We have plenty of people who go out and hoof the pavement for business every day. That's not it's actually the other way around. It's your resident who looks to the broker for help. The broker comes in and says, makes promises, we believe we can do this for you, sign a contract with us, and we'll do that.
Do you have any cities that have basically banned brokers?
Never seen it. I don't think you can. I mean, I don't know from a city standpoint if you can ban a business. I'm not sure. But I've never seen that.
Well, they're basically a sales agent, right? They're going to the different companies and I guess getting cost comparisons and then presenting it to the condo owner and seeing which company they want to go with, right?
Yeah, it's really no different than somebody mentioned insurance before, but a different context. This is almost no different than an insurance broker, right? You go to an insurance broker because you don't want to deal with the insurance companies, or you can't deal with the insurance companies, whatever that is. So there's that middle person who can try and do that work for you. But to directly answer your question, I have never seen that.
But you're saying once the contract is awarded, the customer is dealing directly with you, as opposed to having to call the broker for a complaint. Is that what you said?
It depends on the nature of the relationship. I think every situation is different. It depends. The broker may say, all right, sign a direct contract with my client, or they may say, sign a contract with me, the broker, and I'll sign a contract with the hauler. I think it just depends on the nature
of the relationship. We have to find a way to deal with that. That's a problem. Thank you.
I understand.
Thank you.
Sure.
Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, go ahead.
I just wanted to correct the record because you said the city's, you know, not getting into the waste hauler business. We're not. Just like when we sign a contract with towing companies, it doesn't mean we're in the towing business. It just means that we become the intermediary, and that's what needs to happen. Associations need to get their waste service through the city, and these guys will be the contractors who supply it to the city. So they will bid, and whoever gives us the best price, the city will enter into a contract with, and then they are the only people who will be allowed to operate in the city, and we will choose them, we won't choose them, but we will vote on them. Their procurement will decide who comes in with the lowest prices and the best offer, and that's the only way that we're going to get the best deal for the city. We can have two of them, but they are no longer going to enter into these private contracts with our associations and rob our residents.
Well, I think I see it just a little bit differently, and I think that the reforms can be had. I don't want the city
to start contracting with condo associations and then having waste haul. Wait a minute. I'm going to wait
not,
a minute.
That is,
I, wait
that
a minute.
Is not
I will recognize
happening.
You. I will recognize you in one moment. We're going to do this in an orderly fashion. Thank you. So what I don't want is to have the contract with the condo. There's a way that we can deal with all of the issues that have been addressed without getting into the waste hauler business. Now, I will recognize you.
Number one, we're not getting into the waste hauler business. For example, I don't contract with the city. I just pay for my garbage bill. I live in a single-family home. And if anything comes up, I go to the city because there's a problem. Do you understand? Those people will operate, but they have to respond to the city. They're no longer entering into contracts. Why should I, as a single-family homeowner, have the privilege of not being, bully? I never have to go into a lawsuit or enter into contract with the government. The city provides the service. The city needs to provide the service. We're not getting into that business. Do you understand? We're choosing the people who are going to operate. They are going to provide the service. And then if anything happens, they will have to call Mr. Gomez or Brad, or the head of public work, and we will have to respond to that. So what it does is it just means that they get the same rights that single-family homeowners have. I mean, that's really what the fair thing is. It doesn't make sense the way that we have it right now, because these private small contracts are punishing. So they will continue to operate in the city, whoever bids and gives the best prices. It's just that we're choosing the people that get to operate, and if they try to raise prices, they can't raise their prices anymore. You understand? They can't. And if they have damages, then they're not going to the waste company. They're going to come to the city and say, hey, look at this letter that they sent us. Here's what's really happening. And then they're going to have to do the right thing. And that's all we want. We just want associations, residents and multifamily, to have the same rights as residents and single family. It's not a big deal. I said that we'd contract with whomever you want, whomever they pick, whomever the city ends up picking when they bid. The only difference is that it's just a simple reform that needs to happen so that everybody's getting treated the same. That makes sense? We're not getting in any business. We're not doing anything different. They already do it for residents. All they have to do is do it for multifamily too.
Thank you. I do think that one size doesn't fit all with in terms of condos and so forth. And I know, Commissioner Fernandez, you had, I guess, 25 units here, but I think that was probably just a suggestion. It might be 24 or 20. Yeah. Why don't we go ahead. You're recognized.
Yes, thank you. Jason Neal from Waste Management again. To your question about brokers and regulation, I'm aware of two municipalities that attempted to regulate brokers. Most recently was City of Hialeah last year. They were going to require the brokers to register and did require them to register. They were also going to seek franchise fees from the brokers. They ended up not pushing that forward because there was some change in politics and it kind of went cold, but it never was followed through. But there was consideration from City of Hialeah to do that. And I think what I don't want to speak for the city, but it appeared what the intent was to capture the franchise fees on the revenue that the brokers were charging above and beyond what they paid the franchisees. The other city was City of Miami, and this goes back several years ago. They were considering banning brokers altogether, but that ended up not happening. But that was a consideration at one point. And to your question about who do we deal with when there's a broker, as Grant said, sometimes we can still deal with the customer, but many times we cannot. The broker requires that we deal directly with the broker. So when there's an issue, it has to be filtered through the broker, not directly to the customer. So whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, I mean, that's a policy decision from the city. We are not brokers. We work with brokers when we have to work with brokers. But generally, there's all kind of models, but the general model that I'm familiar with brokers is they will negotiate with multiple haulers, get the cheapest price they can, oftentimes reducing service levels for a savings because they get a percentage of the savings, much like a public adjuster would work. Yeah. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, again, that's a policy decision. And there may be other models out there for brokers, but that's the one that I'm most familiar with.
Okay. Commissioner Fernandez, you're recognized.
Yeah, with the brokers, I'd like, Mr. Attorney, for us to look at policy kind of like what the gentleman was mentioning in Hialeah, to regulate the brokers, because if they're the middlemen, we should be having some sort
of oversight over them. Brokers are not completely bad because in many instances they've helped and they've been an instrument to the client to be able to leave one contract and go to a better contract with a different hauler. So brokers do serve a purpose. The problem with the brokers is when now they say, okay, you can't speak directly with the hauler. And that's what I want to see is avoid that as much as possible because, you know, we're giving the license to the hauler, not to the broker. If we're going to have brokers operating in the city, I think we need to have some sort of oversight over them. And you know what? The haulers are paying a franchise fee. Maybe the brokers should be paying a franchise fee too. I don't know. But I'd like us to explore that.
You know, one of the concerns, I guess, with them paying a fee is it probably would get passed on, right? So that
maybe we don't want the fee then.
We'll think about it. So, but to the lawyer, could we make as part of an RFP, if anyone wants to be responsive, they would be required to have the customer have a direct interface, and I don't know if you know the answer to that. If not, maybe that's something we could research.
We could certainly look at that and work with Public Works and look at what other municipalities have done.
Absolutely.
But okay, it sounds something like that something as it's a matter of contract, so something that you could probably do.
And so, members, what I think we're at a place where we need to let the staff do some more work. You've heard a lot of comments here from all of us about some of the concerns, and I'm sure you've all taken notes. So I think the next step is you need to go back and do some work. At this moment, we're taking the exclusive option off of the table. Okay. So it sounds like we will be looking to at least four of us here. It sounds like we are interested in looking at an RFP that would have multiple operators in the city up to five. I can tell you my feeling is probably around three. And the other thing I'd like you to look at in terms of the legalese, the last time we had three, then one got folded in and then we're down to two. So can we make as part of a contract that anyone that is going to be awarded a contract cannot merge during their contractual period? And that would be have to be part of the agreement.
I love that.
I'd like you to look at that. I don't know. We've got federal laws, fair trade laws, and things like that. So you've got to look at all of that. But these concerns, I think that Commissioner Areola and Commissioner Fernandez both talked about these smaller condos. You know, and many of them are sort of fit the same model where you drive down the street, you're not having to go into an alley and you pick up. And so there may be a way that we can have a cap or have at least an annual cap on any increases. And the other thing is we want to look at the duration of the contract. Is 5 years seems like a long time to me and to have an auto renewal. So let's look at what we want to do there. So okay. I think you got a lot of ideas. And also the other thing is I don't think at this point we don't have an RFP on the street. So
no,
I don't think there's any restriction. So I would encourage you all to meet with the haulers and get their ideas on how they want to address these issues. Because I don't want us to come back and do this again and then have the hauler say they didn't have an opportunity to give input. So I would encourage you, and if the haulers are here, I would encourage you to get in touch with the city. What do you think in terms of timeline? Do you think that we're meeting next September 30th, right, John? Do you think you could be prepared, or do you want to move this October?
I'd like to move it to October, Mr.
All right.
Chair. Just to
so
give
we're
going to
move this item
time.
To the October meeting. In the meantime, I would encourage the waste haulers and members of the public. So, Tabitha, I hope you don't mind if I call you by your first name. And if you have ideas, please reach out. Let us know, you know, some of the things that you think could be helpful. If we've certainly listened to everybody's input. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we will close this item and we will continue it until the October meeting.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you for all the hard work you've done on this.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Raquel, I want to get you back to work. What's you're on number six, I think. Go ahead, you're recognized.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. Raquel Williams, Economic Development Director. I'm joined today by Assistant Director of Economic Development, Heather Shaw, as well as Assistant Director of Marketing and Communications, Matt Kenny, and they will walk through a presentation on our marketing and public relations campaign, if you allow. Just want to hit the highlights. We had a technical glitch.
This is number six on the business permitting process, is that right? Improving business retention?
Yes.
Perfect.
We had a little glitch in Novus, and so you should have a hard copy of the agenda. It should have been distributed to you this morning. We have been very active in execution mode on a lot of the initiatives and programs that we have discussed in the past, and we are now entering preparation mode for some of the programs that we have discussed being planned for next fiscal year based on budget approval, and those include the commercial lease subsidy program as well as a parking incentive program.
And just so you can pace yourself, I would like you to do that in about 10 minutes, okay?
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
Our vacant storefront cover program is going well. We plan a call to artists to be released in the next 2 weeks so that we can augment the design options that we currently have. We are working with the Tourism and Culture Department on that call to artists. For the affordable and workforce housing fee waivers that has been discussed in the past, we did receive a favorable recommendation from the Planning Board earlier this week, and we will be bringing the ordinance for first reading in September. As to the upcoming request for letters of interest for the 41st Street corridor, based on commission action at the last city commission meeting, we will be incorporating language to express that the sale or lease of any of those parcels will require a voter referendum. We also have the expedited plan review and permitting incentive program. We have seen a lot of success. One of the recent applicants that we've approved for the program that we've been courting for the past 5 months, Andreessen Horowitz, also known as A16Z, they are participating in our program, and that has generated a lot of positive press for the city. For the job creation incentive program, you may recall that we amended this program in April to go for companies within not just tech and financial services, but in the subsectors of cryptocurrency, Web3, blockchain, sustainability and resiliency, arts and culture. And we have a lot of active leads and prospects in the pipeline. We anticipate coming to the committee in September with at least one application for this program. We also are actively marketing our CDBG small business grant program. We have awarded about $700,000 of the $800,000 in grant funding. We can accommodate at least 5 additional companies. So for anybody listening, we have up to $20,000 available, basically $100,000 left in the pot. So if you are listening and you're interested, please contact our office. We are planning for a incubator and accelerator program. A lot of times we focus our attention on business retention and business attraction, but one of the things that we haven't incorporated into our portfolio is an avenue for business creation, which really feeds into our whole ecosystem. So while businesses are largely created organically, incubators and accelerator programs are shown to help businesses that are in the early stages. We want to provide mentorship and allow them to have access to capital and create those partnerships. We intend to leverage our resources that we're proposing in the budget. We want to leverage that with an institutional partner with lots of experience in this area. We have participated in 9 trade shows and conferences over the past 4 months, 4 of them at the Miami Beach Convention Center. So we're really leveraging the convention center as an asset to promote all the things we have to offer here in the city of Miami Beach.
Can you tell us the 4? That's really great, because that's something that we had talked about months ago. And if you have that.
So in April, we participated in the Bitcoin Conference and Emerge Americas. In May, we participated in the Cloud Summit. And just this week, actually today included, we're participating in the Florida International Medical Expo.
And I know last year we included some money in the budget to cover these things. So have you programmed that in this coming fiscal year to be able to continue these activities?
Yes, we have requested an enhancement. We have budgeted about $300,000 for a modular trade show and conference booth, trade show activations, and quarterly business events and special events. So we are planning to go on the road with the show. We want to go to Money 2020 in Las Vegas. We also want to go to South by Southwest. For South by Southwest, we want to crawl before we walk and then run. So we want to go and do some research. For Money 2020, we think we'll have the capacity to potentially bring our modular trade show booth that is going to be built out if we have budget approval so that we can take that to Vegas. So we're very excited about what's to come and thankful for the support that we received from this committee. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to Heather and Matt to walk through our Make a Bold Move campaign. We've been talking about wanting to do this for quite some time, and now we have the opportunity to share what we've done and where we are in the campaign. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. You're recognized.
Good morning, commissioners. We have a deck. Okay. That they're going to put up so we can walk you through it. And good morning, I'm Heather Shaw. I'm the Assistant Director for Economic Development. I'm very happy to share with you and to do it with my partner, Matt, on our task to create a business attraction campaign. Next slide, please. Thank you. So the task was that we were to go out and search for how we create a campaign as to how we can attract owners of small and mid-sized companies, specifically in the tech and financial services industries, and to get them to open or expand in Miami Beach. And we would do that by showcasing Miami Beach's culture, our lifestyle, our infrastructure, and these are all the new things that our employees are starting to demand. We're noticing in the post-COVID era that a lot of employees are quitting, and so what's keeping a lot of employers up at night is how do we keep and retain our employees? Next slide, please. So businesses are looking for talent, and so the talent wants so much more these days. So they are asking for lifestyle changes. They're not just wanting to sit at a desk. They're not even wanting to just have a company and they're sitting on a ball and doing their work. They really want to balance their life and work. So the talent is spreading all over the place. They're working from home. They're wanting to have these satellite offices, and we're finding that livability is critical to us attracting the right businesses, and culture matters to them. So we are going to showcase our vibrant culture and our energetic lifestyle. Next slide, please. At the beginning of our research, we noticed some tweets that were coming from people who were in the Northeast region who were talking about moving down to South Florida. And this is one example of a woman who was saying, listen, I have decided to be a snowbird. I'm going to flock to Miami for the winter. And so she's saying, you know, let's get together. And this is like one of several social media posts that we found. Next slide, please. Our primary targets for the campaign were owners and founders and entrepreneurs and CEOs of tech and financial services. The markets that we looked at were Silicon Valley, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Chicago, Connecticut, and Florida, obviously outside Miami-Dade. We looked at the technology, financial services, private equity, venture capital industries, and our primary competitors are Austin, Denver, Salt Lake, and then secondary Portland, Houston, New York, Atlanta, and then obviously Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, Tampa, and Orlando. Next slide, please. The reason why we were looking at Silicon Valley is because in the last 10 years, 75% of the venture capitalists, financial services, and tech companies were going to Silicon Valley. And they also are going to really three states. That's California, New York, and Massachusetts. However, the census for the last year is showing that those cities, plus Chicago, are the ones that are losing most of their employees who are wanting to travel and get a better lifestyle. Next slide, please. And the three major competitors are Austin, which is our competitor with respect to affordability, Colorado with relocation incentives, and Salt Lake City for really the young tech talent pool. Next slide, please. The audience that we were desiring, as I mentioned before, are business leaders and entrepreneurs trying to show them how, if they come to Miami Beach, this will attract. We're the ones who are attracting the talent, and this is where their current employees really want to relocate. Our second is the creative class. These are the knowledge-based young people who really are saying, listen, I want to have some work-life balance, and I don't want it to just be a phrase, but I actually want to have it. And then third is our local talent. Those people who are in our backyard, or those people who have left the area for college or their first job, and we're trying to attract them back to the city to say, this is where you want to live, you have your family here, it's about lifestyle. Next slide, please. What we've found is our core audience are 70% male. They are 18 to 44 years old, they are married, and they are parents. And they are looking to kind of have it be a change in their life, to have more freedom for lifestyle, to be more relaxed, to have a fresh start. Next slide, please. So with the employees, we divided them up into diverse, what they're looking for, what keeps them up at night, is that they're looking for jobs that give them a diverse peer group. They want to be able to network with their colleagues, but they also want to be able to be mentored. They're looking for work-life balance. They want flexibility. Mental health is a huge benefit that they're looking for, and they want a well-rounded lifestyle, being able to work and play and different venues. And, of course, they're looking for high wages and an affordable cost of living. Next slide, please. So we are in our campaign are looking to not just show just come here, but that we as a city are investing in our business community, and we want it to be an entrepreneurial community, and that's our investment to make sure that it is livable and that we understand that culture matters. Next slide, please.
How much more do you have?
Because I'm going really quick, okay, and good. I'm going to turn it over to Matt now so he can go through the actual campaign.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Let me just ask. A good presentation. When we're doing this, it seems like housing, because we've got this housing crisis here, are people asking, because we want people to move, but then are people saying, well, what am I going to do for housing? Is that becoming a topic of conversation, and is that going to be one of our greatest challenges in terms of being able to attract people?
We know that housing is a big element just by reading the paper and hearing what's going on, but I have to admit to you that at least most of the companies that we've been talking to, that hasn't been their primary focus. It is something that is on the list of what they're looking for their employees. They want them to live in Miami Beach. They want to be able to walk to work. A number of businesses that are taking advantage of our job creation and expedited plan review are looking for their employees to live in the city, but it hasn't been a top tier. But it is something that is top tier for us, and we're going to continue to work on making that available.
Okay, great. Matt, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. Matt Kenny, Assistant Director of Marketing Communications. To follow up what Heather was saying as well, I think the housing thing when we did our market research was showing up more for relocating employees who could work from wherever they want. So that's the place where it was showing up the most, that if your company's based in Chicago but you're allowed to work from home and they want to move down to Miami, sometimes housing can be a limitation to whether or not they're coming to Miami Beach specifically. So I'm going to go really quickly kind of through the metrics of what we're seeing so far in this campaign, and I would love to sit with you and go
see if we can do it in about 2 or 3 minutes.
Absolutely.
Okay?
And I'll
Thanks
sit
so
with
much.
You if you need more details. So next slide. There's going to be a bunch of creative slides. You can skip this. You have this in your package. This is just kind of the color palette and the general visual identity for what this campaign is going to look like, obviously sticking to our Art Deco kind of pastel tones. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel here. There's a reason people are looking at Miami Beach as a place, and so we didn't want to, you know, start from scratch. Next slide. So here are some of our initial creative. We wanted to stick, you know, with what we have. Let's say, go with the assets. So say hello to your new boardroom, playing obviously on our oceans and our water. Join a forward-thinking community, letting Miami Beach stand out as a forward-thinking place for tech, showcasing how people now, you know, work remotely. Next slide. This is our Spanish collateral. I don't speak Spanish, so I can take a look at that. Next slide. And you can click through these, Aaron. This is just kind of the creative look and feel. You have this in your package. Yep. Lunch break's mandatory. Okay, so I'll start here. So the goal for us was to attract strategic business leaders to create jobs and attract and retain talent in technology. So it was two-part, and that was one of the difficulties of this campaign, was we're looking for businesses to relocate here, but we're also looking to get individuals who want to come down here who may work for other companies. So it was two very different target demographics. However, there was a lot of crossover and intersection in the way in which we're going to reach them. The positioning for us was the ease of doing business combined with the cultural and lifestyle benefits of Miami Beach. beach specifically, obviously the channel. So a few things that came back in our research that surprised us: Reddit was very much somewhere where these conversations are being had, so somewhere we haven't played before in terms of our marketing campaign, and we definitely have this campaign on Reddit now because a lot of the crypto conversations are happening on Reddit, so we've targeted those people through our programmatic digital. Next slide. You can't see this, so I can walk you through the budget really quickly. Overall, this basically says the budget for this entire campaign was $44,500 just for media buys alone. That's outside of the creative and agency fees. The budget itself was broken out throughout social media and digital. We, with a larger budget, as Raquel had said, as they request additional funding for next year, we would look to really target in on some places like the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, New York Times. What we did, because we couldn't necessarily afford to buy directly with those people, was we got their consumer demographic profiles, and we targeted them digitally across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, LinkedIn. So we're still getting right now a New York Times, a Wall Street Journal, and Bloomberg demographic. We just aren't able to afford to go right into their buys
where,
now.
Where can we find that spreadsheet? Do we have it in the package?
Yeah, somewhere? It should be in the... Oh.
And if you don't, I'll make sure that you get it.
Yeah, I don't find it. If you could just email that to all of our offices, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I can give you this one with Scott writing on it now. So yeah, overall, $44,500. We did this over three phases. The first phase was a little less money. It was just kind of to bring awareness to this campaign, let people get accustomed to the visual identity of it. Two was interest, get people interested in it, wanting to click through. And then the third is intent, where we really are driving the campaign to make people click. And you'll see, I think on the next slide, if you can forward, this will be one of our last ones. This is where we see what our success looks like. So the bottom bar is where I want you to focus right now, which that very, very bottom bar is the numbers we have. So overall right now, we are $26,000 into this budget of $44,000. We have 4.3 million unique impressions, meaning 4.3 million individuals have seen this campaign or interacted in some way. 23,800 clicks, meaning 24,000 people have clicked on this campaign and gone through to this second page. Click-through rate is 0.55%, which might seem low, but it's actually above average. Average for click-through rate for something like this is 0.35. So we're 0.55. We're actually above that, which is great. The one thing that some people may see as expensive is where you see CPM, $6.16. That's the cost per meal, what it costs us to reach 1,000 people. $6.16 is considered high when you're just looking at general advertising. However, I pulled the demographics last night, so it's actually industry average for LinkedIn is $6.59, and industry average for Instagram for our target demographic, these entrepreneurs and business leaders, Instagram is $7.91. So our $6.16 is below both of those while being a little bit high. We did not hit go and let this campaign run. Elliot Forney, who's on my team, looks at this daily. She changes copy. She changes placement of ads based on the click-throughs that we're seeing. So it's always optimized. If we're seeing, you know, people aren't clicking through on the surfboard image, we switch that image out. We get rid of it. So it's, you know, dynamic, always on. We're paying attention at all times. Last slide, I think, is the PR efforts. So here we go. So this is just some of, in the last few months, the PR efforts that we have received, some of the articles. I'm hoping you've seen the article on Raquel in the Miami Herald, a fantastic piece that went out on Sunday. If not, definitely read that. Bloomberg as well last week released an article specifically on Miami Beach and the companies that are relocating here. So I'll provide you with a list of those as well, Commissioners.
Do we have this in the budget for the next year? How much have we put in the budget for next year for this program?
Yeah, so I believe it's $160,000 for this across advertising. I'll let Raquel confirm 100%, but I believe we requested $160,000.
That's our all-in number. For the digital media buys, we're going up to $55,000. We're doing $80,000 for the creative, and we want to also have some videography and photography to amplify the creative, and public relations services, $25,000.
Is there any funding from the Beacon Council that, because they this is part of what their responsibility is for the county, so are we working with them, or is this something we're doing?
So we consistently collaborate with the Beacon Council, and the collateral that has been developed through this campaign is going to be provided to the Beacon Council so that as they go out and market Miami-Dade County, they're including Miami Beach creative and collateral. We actually just did a panel with the Beacon Council at the FIME Expo 2 days ago, and so we're constantly finding ways to work with them. It is not necessarily their responsibility to promote individual municipalities based on their creative campaigns that they're doing, but that's something that they often use to leverage their own resources and their own marketing materials.
John, this is in the budget now, right, for the next fiscal year?
Correct.
Okay, members, any questions, comments? Go ahead, Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, go ahead.
It sounds great. I always see the power of digital media. It's great. Hopefully you guys are collecting email addresses and following up with an email afterward. I don't know how many email addresses you've collected to date, but that becomes very, very powerful if you have some way of doing that. What I thought was really interesting that City of Miami did was they like put a billboard right smack dab in the middle of Silicon Valley. Yeah, and I don't know what the cost of something like that was, but I think like the yoga surfboard billboard in a few strategic places might be interesting. Sure. You might also consider running an ad in Times Square digitally. I think that might be super effective too. You know, like move your office here. You're in the financial district. It's hot, sweaty right now. You look up and you see the beach, and you know that might be something that's effective. And I don't know what the cost of are those. I'm sure it's way more than what we're spending right now.
Well, I will share that it is my understanding that the City of Miami didn't actually pay for the ad that was in California, but that it was a supporter of folks affiliated with the City of Miami. So I don't know what the actual cost was, but I do not think the city paid for it. But we could look into what it would cost to do something like that. I think it could be very effective.
So for digital billboards, it's about $8,000 to $10,000, meaning you're not going to be up there the whole time. They'll cycle you through. For a static billboard, Times Square, I don't know that pricing. I've never had those budgets, but generally about $20,000 to $25,000 for a full billboard in a high-traffic area, $20,000 to $25,000.
Yeah, well, they don't have any static billboards in Times Square. I think most of them are digital. But, I mean, you should just find out because I think that might be cool too. I mean, like, look, it would be way more expensive than anything that you guys are doing. But, you know, congratulations because those are great great numbers and metrics.
Great. Thank you.
Go ahead, Commissioner Rosa.
Yeah. Ariel. Yeah. So, well, first of all, you know, amazing work, guys. Loved reading your feature in the Sunday. It's really nice to see that. I think we've done an unbelievable job getting earned media, right? I mean, I'm not sure that we have to take out an advertisement in the Wall Street Journal because they're doing the work for us by just doing some amazing articles on us. Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez was talking about, I'm intrigued by, and if you guys want to noodle on it and come back with a proposed budget, I think I'd be supportive of it. Like just some guerrilla marketing that might lead to some earned media, do some, you know, some crazy stuff. I mean, you know, during the U.S. Open in New York, you know, have an airplane with a banner saying, you know, move to Miami. Yeah. You know, things that, you know, Times Square is a great idea. Things that, you know, might cost money but also turn into just a lot of PR.
We talked about a New York City subway takeover. Take over the subway and
turn it into... I mean, it's a little dangerous, but...
Inside.
Make fun of it. That's a good idea.
Like retrofit when people are bored at work.
Those are great ideas, you know.
Double the budget, John.
You know, the other thing is, so, you know, the advertising, just my 2 cents for whatever it's worth. You know, the lifeguard stands and the surfboards and all that's really nice and will appeal to some folks. Personally, I want us to also be viewed seriously, too. Like, yeah, it's a great lifestyle here, but if you move your businesses here, you know, we've got already some amazing Fortune 500 companies here, you know, Ryder and all the cruise lines, but now with all these PE firms moving here, you know, serious business people want to know that they're going to be around other serious business people. So, you know, start highlighting the fact that Citadel is moving here, even though they're not technically in Miami Beach. You know, people need to be reminded, like, there's a lot of very, very smart people moving here, and you'd be smart to move here, and you know, network and be part of that ecosystem. You know, get in early. You know, do it now. You know, and then you know, highlighting what Miami has to provide. A lot of folks, when they're making these decisions, they're going to look at that economic ecosystem that is now clearly here, and that's very attractive. That didn't used to be here, but you know, all these financial and tech firms that have moved here, The next thing that they talk about is schools, right? And then to Commissioner Richardson's point, you know, affordable housing, workforce housing is also important. So I think, you know, have answers ready to go. Make that maybe part of the advertisement that we've got some fantastic schools for kids and then a great, you know, university system throughout the region. Pushing the arts and culture, you know, the fact that, you know, we have great airports down here that can get you into Latin America and the Caribbean within an hour, in some cases even less. You know, trips back to New York, you know, tons of flights. The other thing is, and I'll volunteer the mayor for this, I'm sure he'd love to do it, you know, as you go to places like South by Southwest and these places and you're trying to appeal to, you know, entrepreneurs that hopefully will become the next, you know, Google, Twitter, whatever, because that's where these guys go, have the mayor interviewing business leaders that recently moved here, you know. I mean, you have Andreessen Horowitz that just announced they're opening a firm here. You know, you've got clearly Citadel. There's a bunch of folks, some of whom would, I think, be delighted to be interviewed by the mayor. And then just have like a rolling reel of those guys being interviewed. I mean, and steal, you know, steal a page from Mayor Suarez's book, right? It's worked fabulously for him, but I'm sure our mayor would be delighted to interview people in his office that actually are living here in Miami Beach. All those guys live in Miami Beach, you know. You know, little 2-minute clips of why they moved here. That's my two cents.
Great. Thank you so much, Commissioner. Great job, as usual, guys. Should we keep this open and bring it back maybe in 3 months?
Yeah, my ask was, if you want more money, I'm open to supporting that if you have some ideas.
I would love to you guys to get some estimates on the billboard idea. I like that with the surfboard or the lifeguard stand and bring it back. So let's why don't we come back in November on this?
If we could come back in September, we do have an applicant for the Job Creation Incentive Program that we want to recommend so that we can get before the commission in October.
Let's do it.
So, and if we have more information on the from the budget standpoint for the ads, then we'll also present on that or indicate that we need more time.
That's fine. Well, so if we increase it, we're still going to have to do an amendment because we're going to close out our budget on the 28th, but that's totally fine. So let's get it on the agenda for the 30th. Okay, John?
And, Mr. Chair, it's not a required public hearing item, but there is one caller if you'd like to take
public comment. Sure, it's not a public hearing, but I'd love to take the call.
All right.
You've got 2 minutes.
Mr. Magazine, go ahead.
Hi, all. Just want to congratulate, one, the commissioners and elected officials that are really driving this initiative, and then secondly, Raquel and her team. This has been a passion of mine. I think they're doing absolutely incredible. Just the good press and transformation they bring to Miami Beach can't be understated. The one suggestion that I would give is let's leverage the private sector that's already here. That kind of echoes Commissioner Arriola's sentiments. But we have, even if they don't have their businesses here, we have some of the world's leaders in business that live here and have a vested interest in our community. The former CEO of Goldman Sachs lives here. Commissioner Arriola mentioned the chairman of Citadel. I work for the largest minority-owned investment bank in the country. We'd be happy to all contribute to kind of move Miami Beach forward and commit to some sort of just collaboration where the private sector is helping out to kind of move Miami Beach forward. I'm talking to businesses every single day, as are so many other businesses that are already located in whether it's our community or our region. Let's leverage the private sector as well. But again, first and foremost, just want to congratulate the team on this initiative. Super exciting. And, you know, thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Magazine. Thank you. Okay, we'll close this one out.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, we've kept you waiting back there for all morning. So you're up, number 10. We're gonna see how quickly we can move this forward. So you've got a lease you want to present to us, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Elizabeth Miro, Assistant Director of Facilities and Fleet, for the record, and I will be very brief. We have a space at Anchor Garage, 721 square feet, and we have a prospective tenant which will be leasing the space for $55 a square foot on a triple net basis, and they will be responsible for their pro rata share for property insurance, property taxes, and common area maintenance. And the lease is for 9 years and 362 days.
Just under the 10. Commissioner Ariola, would you like to move it?
I'll move it.
Okay, and I'll second it and show it done, passed out of the committee. We're still going to have to move it back to the commission for ratification, right?
Correct.
So, John, can you get that on the agenda for September so we can get it ratified? Thank you so much. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. Okay, building department, right? I think I've got, tech and building. Tyler, item number 3, I think, is our last item. Sorry to keep you waiting as well.
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We have a presentation that we had put together to recap some of the Tyler discussion that we've been having for the last several months.
Did you get a separate briefing on this yet? Or?
I didn't, but my aide did.
Okay, so and I had a briefing. So let's make it as brief but as comprehensive, because I know you're going to need a little guidance at the end. And
if you could indulge us for a little bit, I'll try to go through it as much as possible. So sure. I appreciate it. So when we first had this discussion back in October of 2021, our commitment was to find ways to determine whether Tyler was the right suite of products and whether we were getting the right bang for the buck for the investment. So. We had kind of a three-pronged approach. We had a plan for 12 to 15 months to work on a number of elements and discovery on the Tyler Technologies implementation here at the city. And next slide, please. The first was to stabilize the environment. There were some items that we wanted to do from a technical perspective to make sure that we were running the correct versions of the application and that we were doing the things that the vendor was recommending that we do to ensure success from their perspective. So in February of 2022, we had an InterGov upgrade, which we came back and we spoke to earlier this spring. There were some issues that we encountered with that, specific to Tyler and their way that they did the implementation process specifically. So we came back and we asked for support to put out an RFI. We did that and we received feedback from the market to test who it was that was out there. We've done some additional market research that I'll cover as well. A few weeks ago, we closed out a Munis upgrade, which is our financial and HR system. That upgrade, by and large, went well. We also implemented a comprehensive citywide testing and training plan that we had not done so cohesively before, which has kind of set the standard for us to operationally move forward in a better direction. And in November, we have an upgrade schedule that we're currently working on for New World, which is the 911 and dispatch system for the city. So next slide. So the second component of our plan was to do baselining. Next slide. So we have some statistics that I wanted to share just at a high level to show trending for how the engagement has worked over the years. ERP systems, especially public-facing ones, tend to always be a point of contention because it involves a lot of people in process, and those are things that don't always work concurrently with technology. So. This is a review of the last 5 years of requests from the city of Miami Beach to Tyler with their InterGov team for issues that were documented with them. In 2017, which was the first full year, the full 12 months of service, we were at 403 requests, which is fairly high, but not necessarily something you wouldn't expect on the first year post, go live for a major production system. 2 years ago in 2019, where the blue arrow is, that's when IT kind of changed the direction that we were moving in that. We tried to do more centralized management of the suite. It had been run very decentralized before, which was not helping the cause. So we took it upon ourselves to help manage that, and you can see the trend continuing to drop. So over the last 5 years, we're at 80% decline from the request to Tyler. Part of that has been people and process things. Some of that has been the way that we've managed it. And some of that has been just improvements on Tyler's part, as well. Next slide. Comparatively, these are the requests that come from city departments to IT directly. So IT has two teams that handle our ERP systems in-house. They do configuration, they do training, they do testing. Over the last 2 years, it's been pretty stagnant at 922 requests or so. This year, in July, we're at 1,180. So we're not done with the year. Now that, I'm using it to highlight the fact that, as we've discussed at other times with building and planning and some of the other departments that we work with, there's been discussion around how they've had staffing challenges, there's been staff turnaround. So this really complements that part of the discussion, because obviously if you have churn, there's going to be, you know, an increase in requests. And what we found consistently is roughly 50% of the requests that we get are internal training related things. I know that Anna has worked very hard with her team, and planning has as well. Code works with us on a regular basis as well to do ongoing training. The building department has a systematic plan for internal training. They have meetings on a regular basis to help reinforce that. So those are things that we expect to get better. But I thought it was worth noting, given the other statistics we had. Next slide. Okay, so at a high level, there are three main things that we've done since we started this endeavor roughly a year ago. We had a master services agreement with Tyler, which consolidated the multiple agreements and contracts we had. In my opinion, we did not have the teeth to be able to enforce and go back for variances in their service level agreements or any other issues we had. Everything was handled differently. We also negotiated yearly not to exceed amounts in the maintenance renewal because, again, they're all being held differently, so that gives us a little better predictability. We did the request for information that I'll cover in a few moments. And we also worked to forge a better relationship with Tyler's leadership in each one of those groups. So when we have an issue now, we have an escalation path that did not exist previously. Next slide. I broke this section up into kind of holistic citywide challenges and then things by departments. Some of it may echo with the discussions we've had in the past or perhaps the things that you all have heard from businesses and citizens here at the city. Strictly from a technical perspective, our biggest frustration or challenge has been Tyler has been remarkably bad at supporting the InterGov product in general. That's one of the reasons we had the issue earlier this spring and why we chose to go out to the RFI. One of the few things with tech that's always consistent is there are going to be problems. So from our perspective, a vendor or a manufacturer's ability to support that is really where you live or die, you know, from our perspective on that. There have been times where they send things, you know, to development or they send it to support, and we're sitting waiting for 3 or 4 weeks, sometimes months. That's not a sustainable model for us from an infrastructure operations standpoint. Tyler Portal is something. It's actually the way that Tyler chooses what features and what functionality is improved. So this is a needs versus wants thing. Many of their customers all customers have the ability to go and put something in the portal. Essentially what it is, it's kind of a crowdsourcing, what would you all like? So if we put in, we would like this to happen, and a lot of our peers and other agencies go and kind of like it, so think of it kind of like a social media thing, that's what they prioritize. From their perspective, it makes sense, so they focus on the things that the people want. In the past, there have been requests that have been made, and they've been made kind of isolated from that. So it's something we've worked with the departments to make sure, and we encourage them, when you have an ask, go ahead and put it in, because it really does gain traction. It's the only way that they really pay attention to customer feedback for improvements. The enterprise approach is really what I had discussed previously, where we're looking at things more holistically now as a platform or a suite of products, as opposed to one-offs. And we're also changing and implementing some new change management related items internally from an ops perspective. Next slide. Okay, so there are two main, there are obviously multiple things, but two of the main recurring issues that we've had as far as technical gaps, which is something that you had asked us to take a look at previously, they're permit type changes within the building department that can't be changed. That's a deficiency of the application. It requires you to restart, in some cases, a process, which is a limitation and a frustration, I know, for Anna's team. And the second one we feel is a little bit more, you know, egregious, because it's something that I mentioned in there that Anna has always said this is an issue, because it's something that her team, through their diligence, helped us identify. But from a technology standpoint, it's awful. Once you finalize a permit and a finish status, someone is able to go back and make changes to it. That really violates every chain of custody, you know, data security. Not really a security thing, but the integrity of the data to be able to do reporting, and it really affects our ability to do effective auditing. The information can be audited, but you have to go to multiple places to do it, which, again, operational problem, kind of technical, you know, no. So that's something that's been a challenge with them. Next slide. Code compliance has some issues. with their review and checkout capabilities with that. I don't want to get into too many details on here because I think we may, you know, fall down the rabbit hole. So I'll keep it at a high level, and I'd be happy to share the discussion or speak to your office if you have any additional questions. There are problems with the way that the mobile apps remember locations for the code enforcement officer. So again, that's an operational thing. Next slide. BTRs are always kind of a hot topic and how those are addressed. The BTR renewals today are done manually. Tyler's system does have a way to do that in an automated manner, but there are some limitations with the way the system handles the templates that are used. It gets kind of technical and you know, more in the weeds than we want to get into here, but there are some limitations there. That's something that creates undue strain, in my opinion, for, you know, for John's crew down there. Next slide.
Let's go ahead and start bringing it in for landing. I know you've got at the end some guidance you're going to need
sure.
from us in terms of where we're going. So
okay. yeah,
I
we
think
can do
that's
that.
What Commissioner Ariel and I need to focus on.
Okay. Next slide. These are a couple components that are viable options with Tyler that we can still implement while we make a long-term determination of whether or not that's a product. If it's something that we're trying to make the best of what's available, these are things that we are considering and actively pursuing. Next slide. So as far as the RFI results, and I do want to kind of squat on this for a moment because there was considerable effort there. We put out an RFI. We received 16 responses for that. From an IT perspective, with, you know, just reviewing the responses that were there, we haven't done a whole lot in the way of due diligence and demos and that sort of thing. But there are five options that we would consider to be viable technical replacements for Tyler from the responses that we had. I did some additional Gartner market research with our partners over at Gartner. As a whole, there's 72 vendors that are available in the market that do some component of this. So that number can be a little deceiving because it's not that all 72 do all things, right? 25 of those 72 are what they consider tier one, which means they can handle the volume and the type of customer that we would be. So that keeps whittling the list down. Tyler still remains the largest provider with 40% market share. I know that's something that you both have asked at different times. That doesn't mean that Tyler has 40% because they're amazing. Tyler's model has been, there have been a lot of, you know, acquisitions and mergers, so that kind of, it artificially creates the number. Despite that, they do have the majority of customers. We fit very squarely in their target market. Some of the platforms that we've looked at are what are referred to as software as a service, which you may have seen, like a SaaS acronym. That basically means that you pay recurring operational costs year over year. So this ties into the dollar amount, you know, that we'll get to in a moment. And those really work at scale. So in some cases, if we go and look at just permitting and licensing, it may be much more expensive than if we go and expand to a broader space. Next slide. So as far as numbers go, I was actually at the Florida Government IT conference this week, and I took time to connect to some of my peers that I know were working on ERP upgrades. The two most recent ones that I found, which were with some of the larger vendors that are out there, one was Workday, the other one was with Oracle. And I wanted to highlight the rough numbers of what they paid for that, because this all began as a financial question. We pay about $400,000 a year for EnerGov maintenance. These are costs for similar products, and so that you can see the scale of exactly how much we're talking about. The reason SaaS continues to come up, that's the model that the technology industry as a whole is moving to. Many vendors will not or try to nudge you away from what we have, which is you purchase the software, you purchase the licensing, and you pay a nominal amount, you know, for recurring maintenance. So it really does change the way that we would have to look at this from a financial perspective. The ones that I spoke to here that I'm highlighting specifically, once the contract was executed and the procurement process passed and all that, they were looking at 18 to 24 months implementation. I mention that because when it comes to the decision as to whether or not we replace this and when we do it, we are still looking at running concurrent paths anyway. So from a technical perspective, we're of the opinion that we need to continue to do as much as we can to make this as well, go as well as it possibly can while we run the other angle. Training issues here, I'm only mentioning this because of the number before. Training issues, even after a comprehensive implementation plan, continue to be something that, you know, we're seeing or that we're seeing our peers refer to. Next slide. Actually, one more, please. Okay, so as far as a path forward, which I know is what we really want to get to here, our recommendation is to continue to do the business process reviews that we've been working with the departments on. Our intent there is to identify a lot of the needs versus the wants, because that's something we're going to have to properly identify if we go out to bid. I know that there's an ongoing focus on internal training. Building and planning are our two largest customers for Intergov, and they both have plans in place, so that is well on its way. Change management is something we're doing internally. The get to vanilla for improvements is something that I think we need to get to and will be an output of the BPR process, because when we go out to bid, if that's a decision that we make, we're either going to have to be ready for that, which is only going to make our life better now, or we're going to have to pay someone, likely a consultant, pay an excessive amount of money to do the same process anyway. So we know we're going to end there. So what we're trying to do is work towards that direction with the intent that it's going to fix our problems today, or at least get us in a better position. So that's a positive long term. Or it would help improve whatever the migration to a new solution would be. So the two things that we are recommending now, or that where we're at as a whole from this entire review, is to determine when and if the city continues to use Intergov, or whether we invest resources, time, and money into a new solution. Obviously, the financial impact of going to a new solution is not something that's budgeted now, just because of the timing of how everything kind of worked through the budget. But I wanted to give some high-level numbers, so it's something that we're thinking about. I say when, in addition to if, because while I am not recommending that we don't upgrade, I can't tell you full out these are the exact things that we need to address, right? So our hope, again, strictly from a technology perspective, is to tell you these are all the gaps that are available, these are the problems that we're having, these are the dollar amounts with it, and then we would have to continue to work with our peers in the departments to determine, is fixing this worth the dollar amount, and make this as well, a financial decision. One of the things that has come up routinely is the city is in desperate need of a CRM system, which I'm not sure if I know Commissioner Ariel is well aware of what that is. It's a customer relationship management system. So if you think of when you call like American Express and they say, thank you for calling, us, these are all the times you've spoken to us. So the city does not have an appropriate system to handle customer engagement like that. And while it seems like this has nothing to do with Tyler, it is some of the underpinnings of the problems that we're experiencing. They're showing up in Tyler products, but it's because we have a deficiency that there is a technology solution for. We have a plan to work through implementing Tyler's version of that, not because we necessarily think that's the end-all be-all, but because it will force us into a process where we do clean up and we fix some of the content-related things. So as we decide whether we replace Intergov, or whether we strictly focus on a CRM system, we have a path out. So I think as a whole, that's kind of the review that I wanted to give you all. I don't know if you have any questions, regarding the items.
Do you have the things that you're going to be maintaining and upgrading this year with the current system? Mm-hmm. Is that budgeted in your...
Those are budgeted, and they're part of our annual maintenance with them. Any minor tweaks that we have, there is a little bit of a buffer in the budget that we use for professional services for this type of thing. So there would not be at this time any financial impact for any of the items to continue, for continuance of operations.
Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, you're recognized.
We've been dealing with Tyler for many years, and you know this as well as I do, and the poor quality, and I get it. We know that we need to make this migration. I don't know who the leader is in the marketplace, if it's Oracle or SAP, but we need to come in and do this, and it's going to be expensive. I don't know, what would this cost, 20, 30 million? Well, I mean, we're talking tens of millions of dollars, but they're going to have to come in. We're going to have to migrate all of our systems, integrate all of them, and switch over to the cloud into one integrated system that we don't have right now.
He had a slide.
There were some numbers.
Most
of our
problems are stemming from that. And I think it's not an easy process. I think it is difficult to make this migration, but once we do, we are going to see streamlined processes, systems, CRM that we're lacking right now. Mm-hmm. The interface between residents and tourists, everything will just be so much easier. And I would suggest that we move forward and do this, start this process now, because as you know, it takes a while for this to happen. We've known that we needed this since 2017. To give you an example, It took Miami-Dade College 2 years to migrate over. Mm-hmm. This massive system. That's nothing. Two, three. We're still migrating, okay? You still enter into some parts of it that are part of the old system that we still haven't changed. And it's a process. It's a customization. I know that they come in. But I will tell you that since we've started to do this, I mean, it is such a difference in terms of, like, students and faculty and administration and all of our different systems being integrated and aligned. And if we do this, I think that the impact moving forward for Miami Beach is just tremendous. So I don't know. I didn't see the slide.
Yeah, so but, Oracle, you mentioned specifically, there was a city, a major city here in Florida that did an implementation that completed in the last 12 months. They spent approximately $5.75 million for their first year. $4 million of that was for implementation, and $1.25 million was for licensing costs, which will probably be close to the recurring price year over year. So, yes, it is expensive. Yes, it's incredibly complicated. My staff and I have done a number of large-scale implementations before, which I'll agree is painful at best. I think that looking at the technology as a whole with all the components of this, one of the things that Tyler has lacked by virtue of the way that they've come into the market where they buy others, they've had challenges integrating all of them. So it gives a very disparate experience for citizens. This really comes down to how you make technology help the customer service model. I mean, I run a customer service organization here. You're very familiar, you know, with what that is. And, you know, the tech is kind of a tool. It's not the one-all be-all. I think that we're at a point now that we got through the Munis upgrade where we can dedicate some resources to start doing demos and speaking to some of these other vendors to find out viability while we continue on a parallel path and continue to do some of the cleanup, which, again, I'm pretty adamant about being part of the solution because we have to do that regardless. So if we have the time now, we'd like to do it. And I guess our ask at this stage would be to have, you know, maybe through the end of the year to get a better handle on some of the procedure-related things, and we can come back and give an update as far as what vendors are, you know, technically in business, you know, viable, and then make some decisions around that.
So what time frame, like in November maybe?
If we could go to, November, December, January, somewhere in that.
Okay, well, let's do January. That gives us, that way you can give us, if that's okay with the members, we'll get an update on where you're at with some of the implementation. I know that what you're working on now, you say we can bridge to a new system. And then we need to start thinking about whether or not we're going to bite the bullet. And in the next fiscal year, 24, which will have probably spread over 24 months, and right. We can split the implementation cost in half, and then John can start thinking about how he's going to pay for that, right? So, but it seems like we need to start making a decision on how we're going to do that, right? Commissioner Arreola, are you okay with that?
Yeah, great job.
Okay, thanks, sir. Great job. Commissioner Rosen is also, are you okay? We'll bring it back in January and make that final recommendation.
If I may,
Mr.
Chair, if we have any updates, we've done it over the past few months. If something happens that can change your direction, would you like to hear about that beforehand? You want the item again?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So if something comes up, just let us know. We'll get it back so you can get before us. But otherwise, we'll look to hearing the in January, and you'll tell us what updates you've done with the current system we have and how the permitting process is working and how everybody's happy. And then I think we need to start thinking about making this decision on the migration. So, good job. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
I'm sorry you had to wait so long.
No, thank you.
All right, members, seeing no further business, we stand adjourned. Thank you. Great meeting.
Thank you.